Now, before we get into the actual podcast itself, I do want to take a moment to give a shout out to our sponsor over at NerdRageToys.com. Nerd Rage Toys has an amazing selection of toys and action figures for all you collectors out there. So if you're looking for some cool new things to add to your toy shelf, these are definitely the guys you need to be checking out. They have some amazing pre-orders available right now featuring stuff like Mighty Morphin Power Rangers SH Figure Arts, the Batman Arkham Origins figures, and they even have pre-orders now available for the brand new Funko Reaction figure line, such as the Back to the Future figures, done on that cool vintage 3¾-inch scale. You can catch all of those right now available for pre-order over at NerdRageToys.com. Another reason I love this site so much is because not only do they get a good selection of new toys, but they have an amazing selection of vintage action figures as well. And these guys have everything from the most well-known stuff like Ghostbusters and G.I. Joe and Masters of the Universe, all the way to some of that lesser-known stuff like the Food Fighters and Chris Star. Lots of great action figures for amazing prices available at NerdRageToys.com. And you know what? Another amazing thing going on? Free shipping on all orders over $75. That's right! Not only do these guys have a $6.95 flat shipping rate, but if you go over $75, the shipping charge is free! That's amazing! So get over to NerdRageToys.com, load up on some new toys, add them to your toy shelves. That's NerdRageToys.com.
Greetings, fellow nerds and geeks. Why don't you pull yourself up a chair, grab yourself a beverage, and prepare to enjoy a geek-tastic conversation. Welcome to the Geekeasy.
Welcome back to another installment of the Geekeasy Podcast. This is your place to hang out for all the geek-tastic conversations on entertainment and toys, and today especially, pro wrestling talk, because it's right after WrestleMania 30. We have a lot of things to talk about. I, of course, am Pixel Dan, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Jonathan Leonard. What's up, John?
Like, your opening of the show voice is one of my favorite things. I love it. Catches me off guard every time.
Sorry. I have to turn on Pixel.
No, don't apologize. It's awesome.
Well, joining us again, since we're doing another wrestling-related episode, is our good friend and my tag team partner, Jaron McCaffrey. What's up, Jaron?
What's up?
How you doing, bud?
I actually prefer expert consultant.
Oh, sorry. expert consultant.
I just love that my friends can say tag team partner and actually mean that legitimately.
That's right. Legitimately. Yeah. We've been tag team partners for a long time.
Yeah. We're talking about wrestling all day anyway, but the shows that we talk about performing in sometimes, I mean, often there's just grassroots marketing that gets those going, and I think it's funny every time I walk by a bulletin board and see a flyer for a wrestling event that doesn't have any of my friends on it, I get, like, freaked out. Yeah. Like, I saw one at the grocery store the other day. I'm like, really? Hey, there's a... I don't know any of those guys. Who are they? Why are they in my town?
Yeah.
That's kind of a fun thing, though, because I feel like every time I see one of those, I always stop and I study them.
Yeah.
Oh, I know that guy. Oh, yeah. This guy's in that show. Okay. You know, yeah. Like, I always do that. Yeah. And it is always fun when you're just walking at a random store or shopping somewhere, and then you just see pictures of your friends hanging on the window.
Yeah.
Because that happened to me the other day when I was at Disc Replay, and I was like, hey, there's my friends hanging on the window right there for the PWA show. That's awesome. Oh. So I thought that was pretty cool. We're like local mini celebrities, I guess. For yeah. anybody that knows wrestling. Yeah,
except people don't recognize us. We just recognize
we
each
recognize
other.
Us.
We recognize each other.
Yeah. It is weird, though. Have you ever been recognized yeah. as Guy Smith in yeah. public? That's pretty odd, right?
Yeah.
That's, it's mm-hmm. always a weird feeling.
I've ran into a couple of kids. It hadn't happened in a long time, but you know, back in the days when we were a little bit bigger than we are now, there's a few times where, and usually like a toy aisle or something ridiculous,
uh-huh.
especially for the you know, the persona I wrestle under. It's
yeah.
never made any sense. So it is a little bit awkward.
Yeah. I remember I was driving down the street one time, and I just heard somebody screaming at me from the car next to me. And at first it was one of those things where I'm like, do I actually want to make eye contact with this person, or do I just want to wait for this light to turn green and keep driving because I don't know what's going on? But I eventually turned around and looked, and the person just started waving all frantically with a big smile on the face going, "Spencer Powers! Spencer Powers!" And I was just like, "What's up, guy?" Yeah, I don't really know how to react right
yeah.
now. But so that's always kind of
funny. This
but,
needs to be its own podcast.
Yeah, sometime. It really does.
Yeah.
Well, mine was the best. I got recognized at a movie by a little kid.
Yeah.
But it was one of the very first double dates that I went on with my now wife.
Oh, amazing.
And her parents.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're walking out of this movie, and this little kid runs up to me and, like, hugs me. And
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic.
You want to hear the worst time I've ever been recognized in public?
Yep.
This one's kind of embarrassing. One time I used to have a valet that I came out with. Her name was Cherry Malone.
Mm-hmm.
One time I was at, I think, a Long John Silver's, of all places, for lunch. And this little kid behind me was kind of doing that thing where, like, he was looking at me because he knew who I was. And eventually, I hear him turn to his mom or whoever and goes, "Look, it's the guy that comes out with Cherry Malone." And I was just like, I was mad. I should have just gotten character and started yelling at that kid. Like, beat it, nerd. But that was, still funny. But
hilarious.
Like Stevie Richards did a male valet.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I'm the guy that comes out with her, apparently. Yeah. That's fun. Awesome. Well, hey, before we get into talking about WrestleMania 30 and the Raw following it, lots of great wrestling talk.
So much wrestling.
Yeah. I do want to, I want to go ahead and do our first fan segment, because in the last episode, we threw out the idea that if anybody had any emails or anything that they wanted us to kind of bring up on the show, to go ahead and shoot us an email, send us a message, and we'd be happy to discuss it. And we actually got an email, which was an accepted challenge from you.
Yeah.
Because the last episode, we discussed Veronica Mars, the series and the movie, and Jonathan threw out the challenge for somebody who has never seen the series to watch the movie, just so that we could see what they thought of the movie without
less of
knowing.
A challenge, more of just an earnest request.
Well, okay.
I really wanted to know what the impression.
I think
of
it sounded
was.
Like a challenge. I think you were offering them a challenge.
Yeah. Well, dude rose to it.
This dude rose to it. So we got an email here from a listener named Adam, who has actually been a very big fan of the show for some time now. He's always one
Thanks,
of our regular
Adam.
Commenters. So thank you very much for listening. Really glad you enjoy the show. He sent us a pretty long email here, so I'm just going to do some highlights. But he writes and says, "Hello there, Pixel Dan and Jonathan. I just finished the movie." First of all, he does mention that he put spoiler in here because he didn't know if I had seen the movie yet, which I thought was funny. I have seen the movie now. He says, "Let me preface this by saying I love the 1960s Columbo series and the 1980s and 90s Murder, She Wrote and Monk from the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
So I like a good whodunit. I also loved a little show my wife got me onto a while back called Gilmore Girls. So I also appreciate witty, quick, smart banter in a script. I want to stop right there and say my wife also did the same thing to me. She turned me on to Gilmore Girls, and it was one of those shows that I was very like, well, I don't know about this, but I'll watch it because I love you, and then I really liked it.
I tell you what, I've only seen one season, and I would love to see the rest of that show, and I got turned on to it by, it was a female, I guess, technically, but a totally platonic relationship. Somebody was just like, "Hey, you really need to watch this show," so I watched it, and I loved season one of the Gilmore Girls.
It's actually a really good show.
I never, she moved away, and I never got the rest of the DVDs, but very good show. All those shows that were mentioned, and that's the cool thing about the Veronica Mars, is it is like a new generation of some of these shows. My wife said the same thing. We were big Monk fans. I got her hooked on that, on the DVDs, mm-hmm. After the series was already done, and we hammered through all 8 seasons, and I think it went in, you know, a few months. And when we started watching Veronica Mars, it was probably about halfway through the first season. She was like, yeah, it's like a high school monk. I love this show. And really, it is. It's exactly what it is. It's just one of those whodunits. It's got its own edge, but that description works perfectly.
Right, right. All right, so he goes on to say, being a newbie here, here were some of my impressions of the film. Number one, I thought the little montage in the beginning did a great job of bringing new viewers up to speed. Then he says, oh, yeah, he mentions being excited about Jerry O'Connell. he says he's like Dewey from Scream, but corrupt. And wants to know if he's in the rest of the series. He is not. He was brought in just for the movie.
Yeah, yeah. There was another Sheriff Lamb in the series, and he was a similar character, but I guess It was like his brother.
So this was his brother. Yeah. So he plays the brother of the sheriff from the TV series, basically. He says he loved the dad. As Jonathan was saying, he really strikes an ideal balance between cool dad and firm dad. He says the ending was right on par with A Perfect Murder or Sleeping with the Enemy. Maybe you could relate to some of that.
Yeah, for sure.
He mentions that Dick, the Matthew McConaughey-type roommate, he thought this character was good for the comic relief. He liked the actor's performance as the cliche stoner friend with a touch of depth. Yeah, Dick is one of those characters that we've discussed before that we ended up really, like, loving by the end of it.
And he's totally there for shock value.
Yeah.
But, that guy can hit a cue like nobody's business.
Let's see, what is it? Oh, the photo at the end of them dumping the body. I couldn't decide if it was Scooby-Doo campy or creepy, but it was good regardless. Interesting thoughts.
Yeah, I guess I never really paid that close.
I didn't really either,
So I want to go back and relook at that photo now.
And then he says, Veronica's character in general, I like the idea, again, going back to having a daughter myself, or a girl having indomitable trust in who she is and strength without sacrificing femininity. Femininity. That's a hard word to say.
It's rough.
She doesn't seem to take anyone's guff. I liked the lipstick middle finger bit. Her line about, I bet you've been sitting here since graduation was a riot, which was hilarious.
Yeah.
He said, like, that was like her, kind of like her arch nemesis in the TV series.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And who did some terrible things to her in the show.
Yep.
So that was kind of a cool moment. And the subsequent punch out of the same girl. So overall, he says it was entertaining and it was a good use of an hour and 45 minutes. And he paid the $6.99 on Amazon Prime and he was happy with that.
Excellent.
He says he can watch the three seasons for free and probably will go back to give him a look. He's not sure how much or in what way the reading the last chapter first will affect his exposure to the seasons that all led up to it, but he's willing to give it a shot. It may be kind of cool in an eerie way to actually meet all of these characters already knowing what's going to happen to them, good and bad. That is kind of a funny thought.
Yeah.
He didn't mention in this email, but he posted a follow-up on the website, too, that one of the points he also wanted to make was the scene where she crosses paths with the principal really quickly,
uh-huh.
And he makes the comment about it being boring there without her, really makes him want to go back and watch the series, because he wants to see what their interactions were like.
Very cool.
And there is a lot of really good stuff there with Veronica and the principal. So, that's really cool. It's awesome to hear from somebody who watched the movie that didn't see the show, who still enjoyed the movie, didn't feel like he was really missing a whole lot, but still wanted to go see some of the things they were referencing.
Yeah. And it thrills me in a capacity that I hoped but had no frame of reference for checking on to the idea that I thought that movie would be entertaining no matter what. My biggest fear was that there were so many in-jokes that I caught because I had so recently watched the whole series that it made me think, well, if there's so many of these and nobody gets them, is it going to distract from the movie? But I had a feeling they were kind of designed to where, you know, if you got them, you got them, and they were great. And if you didn't get them, they were just kind of passing conversation, and it didn't really mean anything. And so I get the impression, obviously, you know, Adam didn't bring any of them up because he wouldn't have gotten them without having seen the show.
Right.
But he didn't also bring up the idea that a whole bunch of, you know, he didn't make it seem like he felt like he was missing anything, which would have been my fear. Is sitting there going, I feel like I should be getting something and I'm not getting it. And I didn't get that impression from his email at all.
Right.
So that means it must have been just a really wonderfully written movie like I thought it was.
That's awesome. You know, yeah, it is. It is good to know. And like I mentioned briefly, I did finally get to see the movie and I really enjoyed it. I felt like it kind of gave us the closure that we didn't get from the TV series, which was also very nice. But it was just a really good, really fun ride too. The movie definitely, I feel like, could stand alone on its own. So it was awesome to see it. And I think we even kind of mentioned before, or you mentioned in the show, that it almost kind of leaves the door open to where they could potentially do more movies and they would fit in just fine, but not in a way that it Yeah. It really kind of hurts the story that was in that movie. You know, like, it's got an ending.
Yep.
There's a good ending there. We're totally fine with the ending there, but if it keeps going, that's awesome.
Yep. That movie was a great ending, potentially also a great beginning.
Yeah, absolutely.
But definitely a great ending, so...
All right, so the last thing he's got here will actually kind of play into what we're about to talk about. He says, when you guys do the WrestleMania episode, could you maybe each give your top favorite wrestlers from growing up? I know on the last podcast about wrestling, you sort of focused on guys like The Rock, Steve Austin, Rey Mysterio, and some of the guys who were big names after I lost track in the 90s. But I think you guys are closer to my age, and I was curious as to who you liked from the mid to late 80s. I personally liked Macho Man Randy Savage, Jimmy Superfly Snuka, Junkyard Dog, and George the Animal Steel. So something we can think about for later if we want to talk about.
Yeah, we'll throw that in for sure.
Throw that in there. Then he ends it by saying, thanks for doing these. Whenever I see a new Geek Easy has been uploaded, regardless of the subject matter, I'm always like, yeah. I'm sure I speak for most of us listeners when I say that the way you do it almost feels like we're right in the room with you rather than you guys talking at us. So that's awesome. Thank you, Adam, very much. We really appreciate the email. Very happy that you're enjoying this. And guys, moving forward, if any of you guys have emails you want to send us, if you want to, you know, any kind of shout outs you want us to do, we would love to hear from you guys. You can reach us in a number of ways. You can shoot me an email at admin@pixel-dan.com, or feel free just to post a comment on the Geek Easy podcast right there on the website, and we'd be happy to discuss it right here on the show. All right, so that's going to bring us on to a quick entertainment bit before we get into WrestleMania talk, because we had a few things from the entertainment world we wanted to bring up.
It'd be more like a teaser for our next episode, if anything, and a slight apology from our last episode.
yeah, that's true.
We made a big deal in our little Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles special about how they had just put that trailer out, and the movie was coming out in like a month, and I still swear I saw May 17th or whatever that Friday around there is, and... Dan, you heard or saw the same thing I did wherever we saw it, because it wasn't, like, I wasn't informing you of it.
Right.
We were just bringing it up, and we both knew exactly what the date was, and then it was immediately pointed out to us as soon as the show went live that it's not coming out till August 8th.
Which, it's a little better.
Yeah, it looks a little bit different on a calendar.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a few months down the road there, so that does give us a little bit more time. So any confusion we caused out there, guys, sorry.
Yeah. Sorry for the confusion. That is definitely something we should have caught. But I don't really feel like it affects anything that we said in that
episode. Yeah, it doesn't change anything. It just made us sound like doofuses.
That's true. Because there were several times where we were like, I can't believe this movie's coming out next month.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's not coming out next month. So it's definitely set for August. We also, I had tweeted out a few news articles that came out last week where people were starting to report that the movie had got pushed back due to reshoots and that it wasn't going to come out till Christmas now. But I guess Michael Bay has since come out and said that that is false.
Yeah.
I guess they are doing a few reshoots, but it's not going to affect the release date.
Yeah.
So
the moral of the story is, if we're giving you a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles date, just ignore that. But all of our other information is
everything
cool.
else stands.
Our opinions and the other info are good. The dates are way bad.
That's awesome. Oh, man. All right. The other thing that I briefly wanted to mention, I don't want to get too deep into this today, but we've brought this show up several times in the past on the podcast. How I Met Your Mother just had their series finale. The show ended. And we've brought up a couple times on here how much we have really enjoyed the final season of the show. And have even mentioned that maybe one day we'll do like an episode fully dedicated to the series and just kind of talk about our favorite moments. John doesn't want to. So yeah, the finale aired, and I feel like, yeah, we definitely have our own opinions on it. Actually, all three of us do. And the only reason I kind of want to bring it up is because the three of us have had several conversations already back and forth about this finale.
Yeah.
And all of our opinions are... So, like, me and John are a little bit more on the same page, but we all seem to have, like, our own thought process on why we feel the way we do about the episode.
We really want to concentrate on a lot of wrestling, and this isn't a subject we can get into without a 45-minute discussion, as we've learned. So the gist of it is, I hated it. Dan, you seem to pretty much hate it.
I didn't like
Jaren,
it.
Jaren, you seem to like it fine, correct?
I liked it fine. I thought it was good.
Yeah.
We're going to pretty much leave this conversation at that. If you guys are interested in hearing more, send us that in an email. Like, let us know that you want us to expand on that. And if you do, cool. We'll pop it into our next episode. If you don't, cool. We'll ignore it forever.
I will say that there seem to be a lot of people seem to feel the same way as you and I. at least the night of the finale, yeah. because I saw so much hate for that finale online. But it's kind of doing one of those things.
Twitter was hilarious.
Oh, dude, Twitter was just nuts that night. But it is doing one of those things where, like, as you kind of move away from the episode, you're getting more and more people that have either changed their minds or they're defending it.
Weak
people. So it's definitely something that's worth talking about if you guys actually want to hear us get into it. We've already probably talked about it to death.
Yeah, exactly.
Off microphone.
But that's a perfect test right there. If you guys want to know our opinions in more in depth, then let us know.
Yep.
Well, if they want to listen to 45 minutes of us arguing about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Which
yeah.
is sort of what this show is.
Okay. Well, it definitely can be. And,
this is my second time. I don't know.
I don't know. John and I seem to agree a lot. So that's one of these days we need to have an episode where we disagree about something just so we can see how that goes.
Or we can always bring in a catalyst for that, but we'll talk about that later, too.
Uh-oh. All right, well, let's go ahead and jump into the meat of this episode, which is WrestleMania 30, the grandest stage of them all. It's the time of year that we all, as wrestling fans, are very excited for. It's a huge buildup. It's the Super Bowl of wrestling for anybody who's not a pro wrestling fan. This is the moment that everything seems to really build up to, and then it all just kind of explodes in this one epic night.
I think if you're a big enough wrestling fan, it's more like the Super Bowl is the WrestleMania of football.
Okay. I'll take it.
That's how I see it.
I'll take it. That's right. Super Bowl is the WrestleMania of football. Take that.
What a great 2 days of wrestling we've had.
Yeah,
like, I just want to start off saying that, like, mind blown. And I'm a guy who can be disappointed by some wrestling.
Yeah.
And have been in the past.
Yes, this guy will get so mad sometimes that he'll quit watching wrestling for an entire year.
And it stretched into almost two by accident. But I was that mad.
Bad wrestling fan.
I've never
John.
Been that mad.
No, me either. Me either.
I boycotted once for a month.
Did you?
Yeah.
Man, that was a bad... What in the world?
Something terrible would have had to happen for that.
It was that last time Hogan won the title. When he came back and he won the title, he held it from a pay-per-view to a pay-per-view for a month. I didn't boycott wrestling. I didn't watch WWE at that time.
There's other wrestling?
Kinda. And I watched old stuff. I mean, I'm saying that. Oh, that wasn't a completely wrestling-free month. I just didn't watch.
Well, and in fairness, I mean, I still caught a couple of pay-per-views here and there and stuff like that. I concentrated more on baseball for a year, and then it took me a long time to get back in.
That sounds American.
America.
That sounds American. So WrestleMania is quite the experience for us. I think, you know... It's obviously a big day for wrestling fans, but one of the things I've always liked about it is we've kind of had our own ritual that we do every year.
How long have we been doing this?
How long have we been doing this? It's been a long time.
Gosh. Yeah. Well, 5 years?
5 years?
Is that it? Seems like forever. We should have started this earlier.
So essentially what we do is
we've been watching Mania together for a long time.
Yes, yes.
We've been... It's probably more. It's probably closer to 7 or 8 at least that we've been getting together.
Making it an entire day celebration.
It seems like it's been getting earlier and earlier. You know,
we were growing.
A few hours
That's true.
And watch a couple matches. And then it was like, well, we'll get together early in the afternoon and watch you know, several matches.
Yeah.
It's like we're
got to your house at 9:30.
We wake up and just come straight over and start
watching WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I told somebody that the night before. I was like, yeah, our Mania party starts at 9 tomorrow. They're like, why so late? I'm like, no. Nope.
9
a.m.
Yeah.
Man, we get together, you know, early in the morning like we did this year, and we spend the entire day watching past WrestleMania matches.
Yeah, your wife made breakfast for us.
Uh-huh. Oh, man, we had waffles and eggs and sausage.
Those sausages were amazing.
Yeah.
They're good sausages.
I'm not even a sausage guy. That was, whew.
So, we just eat all day, and we drink all day, and we watch wrestling. We just basically go around the room, and we pick matches from past WrestleMania.
Yeah, that's the rules. That's the rules of it. Everybody gets a turn. We go in a rotating order, and
just has to
pick a Mania match. And No questions asked. If it's the wife's turn to pick and she picks a diva match, we don't give them crap for
which
it.
Which happened like four times, yeah. By the way.
What? Hey, that's fine, man. If it's Mania, it's
all
Mania.
All except for one were good, though.
That's true.
Like she happened to pick really good. They picked the only good divas matches and that Battle Royal.
And that Battle Royal. which only lasted a few minutes, if that. You know, it was like Santino a minute won. Long, and then Santino won.
Yeah.
That was great. So that's our ritual, which is awesome because it just really builds up the whole experience for us. So by the time the show starts, we're just really amped up and we're ready to watch the new stuff. And as we talked about in the Rumble podcast, like things have just been pretty awesome this year. Mm-hmm. I feel like the whole build up for Mania,
the network is amazing.
Oh, the network! See, we haven't even really talked about that yet.
We need to have a day of the network and then. Do a podcast on the network.
Do a podcast on the network. Oh, absolutely.
Well, even around, and I don't know what other pay-per-views are going to be like, but I'm really excited to see because Mania is already such a spectacle.
Yeah.
It's already a week-long celebration. They've been hyping that for years, and they do their access bit, you know, for the whole weekend of and everything. And I've been to several Manias myself, and I've been to the access thing. And I've just hung out in the cities for that week. And you do. I mean, you randomly run into, you know, we ran into Perry Saturn at a mall.
Yeah.
Back in, like, you know, 2001, 2002, whenever it was we were there, you know?
Right.
Just stuff like that happens, and it really is this experience. But watching it on the network and having all those guys, all these expert panels, and they just do shows where they set up an access, and they have Michael Cole and JBL and Ric Flair and Mick Foley sit there and just give analysis on all this past and present stuff. Man. And it's like watching like the Sunday morning football you see every week.
Yeah.
And those guys get together and just talk about the game. I mean, that's what it is for wrestling now there's a venue where they can do that
now
stuff.
They have somewhere where they can broadcast all this stuff.
And it is such a cool feeling. It adds, super cool. Yeah, the biggest spectacle in sports entertainment is such a bigger spectacle now overnight,
right?
It feels
It's like bringing the access and all that stuff into your living room.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
You don't have to be there anymore to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Gosh, they aired the Hall of Fame live for the first time ever.
Oh, which was awesome.
And you got to watch the entire Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Now,
no,
the Hall of Fame,
awesome.
it was crazy
awesome.
Long. Because they didn't have time restraints because they're on the network.
It was as long as any
award
show.
I'm fine with it being long. But, you know, you compared it to the Oscars. How many categories did they cover at the Oscars?
Way too many.
Okay.
So, I'm not saying it's perfect.
Roundabout number.
Around 20-ish? 23,
around,
I think?
Around
20-ish, like that.
And they go, what, 4.5 hours?
No, they go about 3, 3.5.
I think they schedule three and
always go long.
3, 3.5 for four things, okay? At the Hall of Fame ceremony, we had 6 inductees that filled up 4.5 hours.
Yeah.
That was too long.
It was nuts. When you add
felt
the,
like 4.5
well,
Lita
when,
started.
When you add the hour-long red carpet
thing before it,
4.5 hours.
Okay, well, in that case, if you're going to compare apples to apples and you do all the red carpet Oscar stuff, that's like 6.5 easy.
I thought the red carpet thing
but
was
But not
lot
the
fun
point.
I like the red carpet.
Not it the point, neat. Yeah. I didn't actually see any of that.
Oh, that was cool. I mean, they did the same thing as you would expect at the Oscars, and it was really cool because they had it really... I mean, they were just inside the place, but, you know, they had the cool red carpet up there, and they had WWE reporters standing at various locations,
awesome.
And they were stopping
awesome.
The different workers, and they were just interviewing them.
Well, I was about to bring that up, is the wonder of the network is that sounds amazing, and I'm going to go home tonight, and I can turn it right on.
It was really cool, and it was interesting, too, to see which guys would be completely out of character and just like be there and do an interview like they're having a great time, and then which guys would be fully in character for their little promos I noticed it totally caught me off guard, and it was really jarring because they started that thing and they're interviewing all these random people that are in it, like Randy Orton, stuff like that. They're totally out of character. They're just themselves and they're totally chill and relaxed and talking about how much fun they're having, and their families are there with them and they're introducing their families to you. So it's something that we've really never gotten before. It was kind of cool.
That's awesome.
And then they cut over to what's her name, who's interviewing Hacksaw Jim Duggan, who just cuts a friggin' wrestling promo right there. And it's all, and everything. And you're just like, well, there's old school Hacksaw.
I mean,
that's
a mix of eras, though. Those guys had to live those characters at all times.
Right.
And the new breed actually can, you know, be a character and then be themselves every once in a while.
Yeah. It was
really
cool.
Cool.
It was
that's
really fun.
That's kind of another, like, I don't know if theme's the right word, but just a thing I'm seeing more and more in wrestling is that they seem to care less and less about the veil. You know,
it's
especially
the reality
with JBL doing all the commentary and stuff like that. That dude doesn't care what he says.
Nope.
You know, if it strikes his fancy, he'll just say it.
Yeah. Oh, the veil. The veil's gone. I mean, you'd still. I mean, they make no bones that it's performance anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing. I think.
Well, I feel like they haven't made bones about it in a long time, but they haven't been quite as obvious as they are now.
Well, they haven't had all this. I mean, they haven't had all this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. Vince McMahon went before the Supreme Court and said, "Hey, it's not real. It's entertainment." You know what I mean? And they don't allow people to be called wrestlers. They're superstars.
Yeah.
You know, and those guys get fined for saying wrestler and stuff. So, you know, it's been this way for a long time. There's just been no venue
to see it all.
To really take it all in.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of cool stuff, man. And everything just really makes it feel so much bigger with the network now. Mm-hmm. It's so much fun. So, let's go ahead and I want to talk about the actual show itself here, because we've had a...
Just kind of run down the card.
Yeah, I want to run down the card. We had a really, really great build-up. We kind of talked about at the Royal Rumble, we kind of made our predictions for the things we thought we would see at WrestleMania and everything.
I don't even remember what we predicted, but I don't think any of them happened.
I don't think any of our predictions really came true. Plus, we talked a whole bunch about CM Punk and that, was before his whole departure from the company.
Which, hey guys, as it turns out, it appears to be real.
Yeah, it was right after his departure. We did talk about it and how much we thought it was a work and he was going to be back.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. All right, so WrestleMania 30. First of all, for anybody that doesn't know, they brought in Hulk Hogan to be the host of WrestleMania 30, which is kind of a big deal. That's kind of cool.
Super cool.
You know, Hogan hasn't actually been with the WWE for several years. He was with TNA for a while there. But considering this is the 30th WrestleMania, it's really cool to have somebody like Hogan come in, who was such a big deal in the beginning.
Hogan's one of those guys, and if we get to our spot where we talk about our old favorites, I'll kind of touch on that more. But Hogan's one of those guys I've always loved until the last, couple of years he was doing his in-ring stuff. And kind of like you said, Jaren, I don't remember specifically that title match that he won. I was probably excited about it, kind of, because there's a little kid in me. But at the same time, Hogan hit his point where every time he'd show up, I'd be like, "Hey, it's Hogan, and he's trying to wrestle again. What are you doing?"
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But as long as he's not doing that, he's finally hung up the boots and is just showing up as a personality. Man, he can be on every show and I'll be happy.
Right? Well, the opening of WrestleMania 30 was just really something special.
Oh, yeah.
It was just kind of amazing. So Hogan comes out. Real American music, which is always exciting to see, especially at something like WrestleMania. Because even as much dumb things as Hogan does in the public eye over the years that makes you roll your eyes and just go, "What is wrong with him?"
Yep.
When that friggin' music hits and he comes walking down the ramp, you're just kind of like,
"Yeah,
this is awesome." Exactly. that's how I feel every time.
Cartoon superhero lives again.
Yeah, you know.
And it's amazing.
So he comes marching out and gets in the ring and he's cutting his promo, which is already kind of become a big thing because he accidentally called the Superdome the Silver Dome twice, which is funny. He slipped his words. You know, it was a mistake. Yeah. It happens. But it was amazing because he's out there and he's cutting his thing, and then all of a sudden we hear the glass shatter. Stone Cold Steve Austin comes walking out.
Well, I'd like to point out real quick, though, before the crowd corrected him, because the crowd thought it was funny the first time. The second time, they started booing him.
Yeah.
And because even he and the announcers at the same time, too, I think it was JBL goes, "Hey, look, Hogan, thanks, we're back at WrestleMania 3, the first time he said it, but it kind of blew over. And then he did it again, and he did it again, and the crowd was like, "Bah." And he's like, "Well, what are you, well, we're in the Superdome, aren't we, brother?" It was hilarious.
It's so funny. So Stone Cold comes out, and this is what makes it even better, because then Stone Cold even starts calling it the Silver Dome on purpose to, poke fun at what Hogan just did, which by this point, now the crowd's forgiven it. Now they're laughing with it. And we just have this epic moment of Stone Cold and Hulk Hogan standing in the ring together at WrestleMania.
Yeah, and you knew both these guys were going to be there. They announced Stone Cold late, but they did announce ahead of time that he was going to take some level of involvement in WrestleMania.
Right.
So it wasn't a huge shock, you know, when the glass broke. You're just like, "Okay, here's what he's doing. Cool. Awesome. You get to see two of the biggest icons ever in the ring."
Right.
You know, I wonder what's missing.
Yep, yep. So just as they're out there being awesome and you're soaking it up, thinking this is the coolest thing you've ever seen, that's when The Rock's music hits. Mm-hmm. And this was a total surprise, because I don't think any of us knew that The Rock was going to show up.
I had no idea.
So The Rock comes out, the crowd's going crazy. Now we have Hogan, Stone Cold, and The Rock, three of the biggest names in professional wrestling history, all standing in the ring for the first time ever together at a WrestleMania. This is just one of those moments that you're just like, this is going to be a great show because this is the best
the
way.
Crowd was so jacked. Yeah,
like this is the best way you could start a show like this is to have these three guys in here. And they do the whole thing with Austin bringing in the beers, and they're all drinking beers together.
And... Well, and then The Rock took his pot shots at Hogan.
Oh, that's right.
So it was just, the two biggest stars of the 90s making the biggest star of the 80s eat crow over a microphone flub.
Because of the Silver Dog thing.
Right.
But, I mean, it was all in good fun, too, you know? Like, everybody's Hogan's laughing, and Hogan's cracking up, and they're all just having a good time, and you're just
They did the catchphrase kind of pass off.
Yep, they all said each other's... I mean, they all did each other's, their own catchphrases, and... Oh, it was just such a cool moment. I mean, it's...
Did you love it or what?
Well, yeah, I thought it was awesome. It was great. And it was, you know, I don't love Hogan.
Yeah.
I really don't like... He's been showing up on Raw this past month or so. And every time... And I'm just, here he is again. And nothing against Hogan. I liked Hogan when I was young because I was a kid and everybody did. And I've respected Hogan... Going back as an adult and going back as a wrestler and watching some of his matches, I certainly have a lot more respect for what he's done. But lately, it's just it's always the same thing, and I'm tired. It's not even a dislike of Hogan. It's just I'm tired of his shtick, and that's all he does anymore. I mean, what you gonna do, brother? And you know,
that's all he does.
So I wasn't super excited when his music hit for Mania. When Austin's music hit, I was like, this is awesome.
Yep.
This is great. Because we never got that, you know what I mean? Like, they never even really had, even when they came back and they were back for that WrestleMania when Hogan wrestled The Rock.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, Austin wrestled Scott Hall.
Yeah.
And they were both in the NWO and they still didn't really have that confrontation.
Yeah,
you know
really
what I
no
mean?
Interaction.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was cool to finally get that. And then when The Rock came out, it was awesome to see all three of them in the ring together. I mean, I'd say they're the three biggest names.
Yeah.
You know, the three biggest names.
Absolutely.
But what you guys aren't mentioning is how they talked about the young stars.
Yeah.
You know, The Rock compared Daniel Bryan to Austin.
Oh, man, how awesome was that?
And compared John Cena to Hogan.
How awesome
you know,
was
I
that?
I mean, the fact that those three guys were there and they were still like... You know, it's time to let the young guys do their thing.
Man.
You know,
well,
just kind of, even for them to acknowledge that, you know.
It's not something that wrestling used to have.
Right.
It's not.
I mean, that was part of the big problem with wrestling for a while, is the guys who got the power got enough of the money and power and started shutting everybody else out.
Yes.
So to see, you know, and Hogan was a big problem in that.
Yeah.
Like one of the biggest.
Yeah.
Yes. Him and Nash
Some
probably
of the WCW,
led that charge.
Yeah,
right?
WCW was a big problem.
Of the holding people down, you know.
Yep.
So to see him in the ring with two of the guys, technically he was sort of holding down,
right?
You know,
yeah,
that had transcended it, and all three of them coming together and going, you know what, you know, here are, and that is, we'll talk about that as the night goes on.
Well,
that was the theme of Mania.
I was
going to
say that right there, that promo set the tone.
The
that set the tone for what we were going to see this whole show.
Yeah.
Which yes,
and
this Mania felt like the passing of the torch to the next generation.
Yeah. Yes, it was funny too because even when Rock tried to bring up the Cena Hogan relation and the crowd tried to boo him and The Rock kind of quite like shut the crowd down, you know? Because it was like, you know, somebody's going to come out here and they're going to wrestle in the name of loyalty, hustle, and respect. And everybody's like, whoa. And he's like, no, no. You know? They're going to do that and they're going to do that because somebody else once came out and said their prayers and ate their vitamins, you know?
Yeah.
And it just kind of went on with it. I thought it was awesome.
It was fantastic. Yeah. It was so, so cool. So, speaking of the whole... passing the torch. The opening match of WrestleMania 30. Here's something that I bet a lot of people didn't expect. The opening match is Triple H versus Daniel Bryan.
Mm-hmm.
And the stakes for this match were that if... Well, I guess it was either way. The stakes for this match was the winner of this match got to move on to the main event to be inserted into it to make it a triple threat for the title.
Yeah, you knew the main event was a triple threat. You
so
just didn't know who the
you didn't
guy
know if
was,
it was
yeah.
going to be H or Daniel Bryan. And of course, the big storyline they've been running here is that Triple H is now kind of the power figure. I mean, he's the guy running the company.
The authority.
He's the authority. Yep, that's the name of their little heel group right now. He's basically just been coming out in a suit for a long time. He hasn't actually been doing any wrestling, but he's holding Daniel Bryan down, and he's not... You know, he's forward with that. He's like, I don't want Daniel Bryan at the top of his company.
I could talk up this feud for an hour.
Oh, it's been so good, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's great, too, because they're doing that thing where they're taking that reality that, you know, Triple H has always been that guy that the internet fans hate because he's dating the boss's daughter. Now he's married to the boss's daughter. He's putting himself over. He's, you know, he's holding guys down. So he essentially took all of that stuff that everybody has always said about him and he put it in the storyline with Daniel Bryan. And he's just being upfront about it. Like, he's been cutting these promos where he's just been like, oh, what are you going to do, cry about it? And saying stuff like that to the fans. Like,
for the crowd.
Yeah.
Not like Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, no.
The crowd.
He says it to the fans. I'm holding him back because I don't like him. Yep. What are you going to do, cry about it? Out, like, that's his thing.
Him and Stephanie. Stephanie even said, you know, she was talking to Daniel Bryan's face one day going, what are you, like 5'8", you know? Like, look, buddy, you're a solid B+. And they both, Triple H said that to him too. Like, you're a solid B+. This is a great spot for you.
Yeah.
You know?
You should
just
be happy with
be
where you're at.
Just be happy and run with it.
Yeah.
You know? Just take that and smile. You know? Some guys can't make it to the top. And that is, it's a culmination of all that stuff you hear about.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, like we said, we're talking about the theme of this night being the torch being passed and how a big problem in wrestling has been, you know, the older established guys holding down the younger guys.
Yep.
And through some of the eras, part of that has been a size issue. Mm-hmm. And part of that has simply been a newcomer issue.
Right.
And it's like they took all of that stuff and just went, hey, you know what? Let's just say it out loud.
Yeah.
This is what we're doing.
Absolutely.
You know, take this crowd. Yeah. You know.
And it has made for an incredibly entertaining storyline. And, you know, I think we even talked about in the last podcast, too, how big of a star Daniel Bryan has become.
You know, amazing.
It's been absolutely amazing watching this guy just keep climbing and climbing and climbing and climbing. And this storyline was the perfect storyline for him. Because
that video package gave me chills.
Yeah, right?
When they were showing even like the NXT days. Because I didn't know. I had heard of Bryan Danielson before he came to WWE, but I had never laid eyes on him.
Yeah.
And so they start showing some of that stuff, like with him and The Miz when he first showed up and was kind of nobody. And then they even go farther back for a few of those shots where it's like, and he looks like such a little kid without the beard and stuff.
Yeah,
you know, just sitting
right?
in some, like, you know, high school gym or wherever he was in the old school arenas and stuff. And it was just, ugh. And then that match, like you said, I was shocked when that match was first. Except that I was like, oh, they're starting with this, which logistically is the only way they can do it because these guys are in the main event.
Right.
Yeah. But
it's like I had to realize it after I was surprised.
But I was going to say, though, I think that's kind of another one of those things that it was shocking to a lot of people because a lot of people just have that opinion.
Yeah,
that
you just.
Triple H will never open a Mania.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
right.
then straight up, there he is, right there at the beginning of the card.
Yep.
Gosh, dude, and just like, you know, the crowd reactions that Daniel Bryan gets is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. I can't,
just
I think
Jaren
said that the last person he remembers getting that kind of reaction was Stone Cold. When, like, you'd see everybody throw the hands up for Stone Cold.
Yeah, man.
That's the last
time
you've seen anybody react the way they react for Daniel Bryan.
Yep.
It's amazing watching.
Yep.
How many fans were in the Superdome, did they say? Do we have, it's
over
75,000 somewhere. Yeah, it was like over
75,000.
And most of them were doing the yes chant with
every
him.
One of them,
as he's walking to the ring. It's
all
just an amazing
sight. Kind of really makes you take a side note, not to take anything away from the talent of Austin or Daniel Bryan, because clearly these are the guys, but it makes you wonder how much of it is the little guy versus the authority storyline, too. Because I didn't even necessarily make the relation until The Rock pointed it out, but they are kind of running that same track there.
Yeah.
And it's the biggest two stories I can remember.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, that's no accident. You know what I mean? I mean, think about, you know, well, I mean, that's not new. You know, the incarnation of it is new, and we liken it to Austin. But I mean, even if you think back to like Dusty Rhodes versus Ric Flair, you know, Ric Flair and the Horsemen were suits and, you know, suit and ties and Rolls Royce and look at our, you know, and everything corporate America.
Right.
At a time when, you know, we were first starting to see like, you know, the Walmarts and the big corporations that were coming in and shutting down the mom and pop shops, you know, mom and pop grocery stores and stuff. And then you had Dusty Rhodes, who was the common man and, you know, who was the son of a plumber and everything. You know what I mean? So, like, this is not a new ideal, and it's easy for people to attach to and identify with because everybody's got their boss that they hate. And everybody's got the big guy looking down on them that they just can't ever get over.
Right.
I love my boss.
You love your boss.
I like my boss, too. I happen to be in a very good position. But
I get your point.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing to see. And it's a popular storyline, but it definitely takes the right guy to play it, too.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because I know that there's probably been instances where they've tried similar types of stories in the past with, you know, somebody fighting the man.
Yeah.
But they don't always blow up to this proportion.
Yeah, for sure. And that, and again, that wasn't like, my point wasn't a takeaway at all. Clearly these are the guys.
Right.
My point was just that I made that relation of, oh man, these are really similar storylines.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Right, right. So we get Triple H versus Daniel Bryan, and it's the opening match. And I'm just going to go ahead and say it was probably up there with my favorite matches on the entire card.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was
so solid.
It could have... It. I mean, that's... Yeah. That,
well, it's two of the best workers out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, dude. Triple H, I mean, don't care. You know, for the flack that dude gets all the time, he's amazing. He's a great worker.
Yeah.
And, man, you get a guy like him, he's just one of those guys that he gets it. You know he gets it. You can see it. You can tell that he grasps what he's doing.
Oh, for sure.
And especially when you get him in there with a guy like Daniel Bryan.
Well, he's always been a student of the game, you know?
Always.
No pun intended.
You know, yeah.
I guess. But that's the thing with H. I saw an interview. I got to try to see if I can find it again someday because it was one of the coolest things I ever read. It wasn't all that terribly long ago, but it was Triple H, and he was talking about a lot of that stuff, the kind of flack he gets and the way the internet talks about him as being some kind of diabolical mastermind. And he's like, I go out and read this stuff and it's, I did this and then I did that. And even he said, he's like, you know, if I was half as diabolical as the internet thinks I am, I'd be the coolest guy ever. You know, like, I wish I could think like that. But he's like, the reality of it is I've just always loved this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the guy who's, you know, slowly taking over this company because I married the boss's daughter. I'm the guy who's slowly taking over this company because I was the guy who, when I was younger, went to Vince and said, hey, can I show up to this booking meeting? And other people would come and say the same thing because they'd want the power, and they would come once or twice because you find out that you've got to be in Connecticut at 6 a.m. to hopefully do a meeting that starts at 9 and lasts 3 hours, and then you got to fly out to wherever your show is that night and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, guys would do this once or twice, would not immediately start getting their way on everything, would fizzle out and just start complaining about it. And I showed up every week that they let me do it because I wanted to learn this stuff. And it was hard, and I lost sleep, and some of my other stuff suffered, but I wanted to do this. So I've worked really hard, you know, to kind of get there. And just, like, listening to him pour his heart out about, you know, hey, this is not a coincidence. This took a lot, you know, and to really kind of find the base for, you know, how good he is and how he knows all this stuff. It was really super interesting.
That's awesome. That's really cool. So what'd you guys think of this match?
Great match.
Terrific.
I mean, it was the way to see, like, you know, who Triple H is. And he's been, you know, gone from wrestling. Not gone from wrestling, but he's been out of the ring for so long. You know,
he's kind of doing the part-timer gig. He shows up every once in a while.
And if we're being completely honest, man, he can be and has been inconsistent in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But man, when he's on, he's on, and he was on. And I think you can always tell. He kind of, if the guy he's working with is excited, like, he picks up on that.
Yeah.
You know, and he hits it. And he was, you know, man, Daniel Bryan is just firing on all cylinders. He doesn't have weaknesses in his game right now.
And again, not only was he working with one of the most phenomenal workers in the ring, well, not only was Triple H working with one of the most phenomenal workers in Daniel Bryan, as we were just saying, you know, Triple H being such a student of the game and so in love with the industry, like, he knows what he's a part of.
Yeah.
This has got to be jacking him up, too.
Right.
Like, he's super juiced to be out there and running this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he can feel that crowd, too. You know, and the whole point of him, you know, the whole point of his existence as a heel is to get that reaction for the face. So he knows he's part of that, and that's got to be flowing through him.
Right, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
And you know, I thought Triple H had reached a point where he was one of those guys that would just never be booed again. You know what I mean? He's been around so long.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I know I just said he was inconsistent, but performance-wise, he's consistently always there, and he wasn't. He didn't spend a lot of time on the DL list, and he wasn't, you know, gone a lot, and he didn't leave and go to WCW and come back and then leave for a little while, and, you know,
he's done so much good and bad.
Yeah, you know, the crowd just, I thought they would love him forever.
Well, in storyline, good and bad, I guess.
You know, I just thought the crowd would love him forever, and he'd always get cheered when he comes out, and he'd always be kind of, you know, at least half face.
Right.
But, no, he's not, I mean, he didn't have a person in that crowd on the side.
Nope, not a one.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been awesome, dude. Just the way he's been working that whole storyline, though, it's been perfect. Perfect. So that match was fantastic. And which was a great another great way to start off the show as far as the match goes.
Yeah.
Daniel Bryan wins. Mm-hmm. He wins the match and he wins it clean.
Mm-hmm.
Like he tapped him out, right?
Yeah.
He got him with the knee and pinned him.
You so tap out Triple
H. No, yeah, there you go. That's no, I don't tap out.
One guy did that one time at a Mania, and look what happened to him.
Who was that?
Shall not be named.
Yeah, I forgot we pulled all of his. We pulled all of his discussions from our show.
So Daniel Bryan wins. It's an amazing match. And of course, Triple H is just upset about this immediately, right. So we get a post-match beatdown.
Yep.
So now Bryan's going into the main event. He's been inserted into the triple threat, has a shot at the title, but he's got to go in injured.
Can I take a half a second to point out one other thing, too, that I don't think like I've taken the time to really acknowledge until Mania here, is how awesome Steph has been
in this whole run, too.
Yeah. Because she's cut some of the best promos I can remember her ever being a part of, and she's had more conviction telling Daniel Bryan that he's nothing than I ever remember her having. And maybe I'm remembering it wrong.
Well,
it's just the story sweeping me up, but I've been super impressed with her.
No, she's been great. I mean, when they were doing that whole, you're a B-plus player, I mean, she was so sincere and trying to say it like it was a, like it was a compliment.
Well, she was giving him, like, the business talk. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was totally, it was
she's been working the crowds like nobody's business. Because when they came out for that, after the match was made and that Raw that Daniel Bryan didn't even show up and she came out to do that promo and Orton cut her off and they were doing their little shtick and the crowd was just trying to do the Daniel Bryan thing and she just started going, excuse me, hold on one second. Guys, chant it all you want. He's not coming.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and just kind of like really just like sucked everybody right back down and back into their conversation, you know. Yeah.
Well, Steph's always been great, too. I mean, she was originally with Triple H, she was doing a different thing, you know, and it wasn't the strong character that she is now, but she wasn't the strong character that she is now.
Yeah,
right,
you
for
know?
Sure.
But, I mean, she was great then. I remember when Triple H, when they were supposed to renew their wedding vows, and Triple H turned on her, and you always see that image of Steph roaring at him in the ring, hair's half over her face after he pushed her down. It's oh, man, dude, that's great. Great moment. You know, she knew. She's a McMahon.
Yeah, there you go. Yep.
She's a McMahon.
Born and raised in this business. So, great opener for the night. Brings us into match number two, which I was kind of surprised was the second match. But The Shield versus Kane and the New Age Outlaws.
You know, in retrospect, not surprised at all.
Not surprising in retrospect. You're right.
Yeah, it's placed on the card. It was perfect right there.
Right, exactly. I just remember going, wow, we're going right into this already.
Yeah.
So, this was kind of set up because I guess Kane's been having some issues with the Shield, kind of building up. This was one of those matches where I felt like kind of came together a little more last minute than everything else. Because most stuff on this card had pretty good builds.
Yeah.
The Shield and Kane storyline has only been going for a few weeks, right? And then the New Age Outlaws got added the week before WrestleMania.
Right. But this is kind of a stepping stone in the Shield story, which has been building. You know? I mean, the Shield came on. And they're the Hounds of Justice.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And they came out and attacked Ryback, and, you know, they did that thing where they were, you know, Heyman had hired them to help CM Punk, but even right away when Heyman was trying to control him, he couldn't.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden they're working for the Authority. But slowly you start to see that control slip.
Yep.
You know, to where even the Authority. So, I mean, this is kind of the culmination of the Shield, you know, I mean, they'll work and there'll be alliances, and obviously they have the same agendas at some times, but they're not anybody's pawns.
Right.
Yeah. So that's kind of what this was for.
And it's another one of those things in retrospect that works, because it wasn't even, and we'll talk about it more when we talk about Raw, and especially in coming weeks, I think we'll figure out that it wasn't so much the Shield versus Kane and the New Age Outlaws as it was the Shield versus the, you know, the what is Kane's title?
The COO.
Yeah, you know, it was Kane versus a part of the Authority and Triple H's buddies.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what it was.
Like, the people he was fighting were symbols, not...
Exactly, exactly. Well, and this follows right along with our theme, too, because the Shield, these three guys, are younger generation guys who have really been picking up steam. I mean, they are great workers. They're so much fun to watch. And you've been watching these guys just get bigger and bigger and bigger with every time they're on TV. I mean, they got to the point where even though they were the bad guys working for the authority, they got popped every time they came out because the crowd just wanted to see these guys wrestle to the point that we finally saw them pretty much make a full-on face turn right before WrestleMania.
Yep.
Which got people even more excited. And so this match here was, like you said, this was like the next stepping point in their story.
Right.
Essentially, this was a WrestleMania squash match. Yeah, I mean, these guys came in here, House of Fire, just, you know, destroyed the New Age Outlaws.
Oh, Kane and the Outlaws got no offense.
No offense. None. Dude, none. Just destroyed them. And they were so amped up. It was so cool watching how, like, full of energy these guys were. They got in there, they just destroyed the New Age Outlaws and Kane. Kane ran off. You know, they did the triple power bomb to both Road Dogg and Billy Gunn at the same time, which was amazing. And then they just stood tall with the crowd cheering them on. And it was a really cool moment. And like John said, that's going to lead perfectly into what happens the next night on Raw, which we will get to when we get to that point. So good stuff there. All right, so next up is the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal.
Man, was that third?
That was third.
So essentially what they did here was they kind of found a way to get a bunch of the guys on the card who they didn't really have matches for, which I think is cool. I'm happy about that.
That was awesome.
I rolled my eyes.
liked it.
I thought it was a good way to get all these guys on
the show. When they announced it, I rolled my eyes.
Yeah. Well, really, I mean, you're kind
of
like...
I thought you were one of the guys who was pro the idea when we were talking about it the other day.
Not really. You know, I mean, I wasn't anti the idea. I liked the idea... To give this to Big Show.
Right.
Yeah. I like the idea for Big Show to win it. And when they first said that, I was just like, oh, so this is how we're going to squeeze everybody else on the main.
Well, that's totally what he felt like.
But it's not the same, they're just going to squeeze however many names they can in there. A, we've talked about that before. That's a good thing for Manias anyway, because it is a big morale booster. But B, even more so, in a year where your showcase is, you know, here's all the new guys... They found a way. I mean, there's a lot of new guys that are good, that have strong presences, that they needed to get in there. And there was a lot of established stars that they didn't just have room for. This was the only way to really kind of do that. And they did it justice in a way that they rarely do with Battle Royals.
Well, and I will say, you know, what I'm coming to is like, you know, when they announced it, I rolled my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
When I watched it, it was awesome.
Right. Yeah, like, Hogan has been the guy who's been, like, announcing this the whole time. Remember, that was
He created this.
It was his big announcement several weeks ago. He was doing this to honor his old friend Andre the Giant, who was a big part of the early WrestleManias. So that was, like, their big story that they put into it. And they created this giant trophy with Andre the Giant standing on top of it, which was for the winner. And that was essentially all the Rumble was for. The winner got this trophy. So it's got everybody else in it, including the Big Show. And just like you, I kept thinking... Well, this has got to be just so they can give Big Show an Andre the Giant trophy, which I'm totally cool with.
Right.
Well, like, that's what I want to see happen.
Yeah, you know, and I liked it because Big Show's a guy at this point who deserves to have... He doesn't have an accolade that's like his accolade, you know? Yeah. I mean, he's been world champion and he's wrestled, you know, I mean, he's wrestled all the names, but like...
He's done it all, but he doesn't stand out with a thing.
Yes, yes. Yeah. You know, and... To be the guy who goes in and, you know, whether it's the first, you know, or whether it's the first or the only.
Right.
You know, to be the guy who wins the Andre Memorial Tournament Battle Royal at WrestleMania 30. Okay. Yeah. That's his stamp, finally.
You know, plus it would have just been fitting because, I mean, he was billed as, like, son of Andre when he first started coming out as the Giant in, like, WCW. The Giant. I mean, they didn't stick with it long, but that was kind of like his shtick was, hey, look, we got a new Andre.
Yeah.
You know? And so to kind of start there and then, I mean, he can't have too much gas left in him. So to you know, come near ending there
would have been full circle. Exactly.
Yep.
So that brings us to the next point here because the Rumble's going on. It's a typical Rumble. I mean, there's nothing too extraordinary happening, but there's some fun moments. You get Kofi's half elimination thing that he always does at Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
Where like they throw him out over the corner.
Oh man, that was cool though.
Right. Well, I think it was botched a little bit, but I'm not sure.
It was definitely botched a little bit.
I think he was supposed to land on his feet on the steps
and run back in.
And then run back in.
In that case, it was botched cooler.
But he fell. Yeah. He falls all the way down to his butt, and his ankles are still on the steps, so technically they're not touching the ground. And then he gets up and runs back in the ring, which is really cool.
Yeah.
So they do that craziness. But we come down to the end of the match, and all the way up to this point, I wanted Big Show to win. And then we got to the final two, which was Big Show and Antonio Cesaro. And all of a sudden, you started feeling like this little bit of, well, wait a minute, something awesome might be about to happen here.
Well, I just thought it was kind of funny because I thought Cesaro getting to the last two was like his push.
Yeah.
Like, hey, they got some faith in this guy. They're going to let him go with Big Show for a couple minutes.
Yep. And this is another one of those younger generation guys who has really been building up steam. He's been getting a huge fan. Oh, he's been awesome. And the fans have really gotten behind him all of a sudden.
It's got so many of these guys are heels that the crowd loves so much.
I know. Right. Well, it's because, look, the crowd is at this point now.
They're hungry.
They're hungry for good wrestling.
Yeah.
And when they see guys who are good at what they do, they're cheering for them. They're letting the WWE know.
Yeah.
They're like, these are the guys.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome.
It's amazing.
These guys are seizing every opportunity.
Yeah.
And the way the WWE feeder system is designed right now, it doesn't foster that. And which is crazy to me because that's what Vince and that's what their company is built on. You know what I mean? And all their guys, Austin, HBK, The Rock, you know, all their biggest names that they have, Triple H, the biggest names that they have are all guys who have seized on opportunities and just chewed up everything that they're given. Ringmaster, you know, Stone Cold, you're going to be the ringmaster. Okay, I'll do it to my best. Hey, this isn't working. Can I do something else? All right, well, what do you want to do? Okay, we'll let you do that until you fizzle out. And he ate it up. And okay, well, here's, you know, Savio Vega. And he ate it up. Okay, well, here's King of the Ring. And he mashed it. You know what I mean? And like, he had...
And then cut that promo. Yeah. Which crowned him.
And
he had
a huge feud with somebody who wasn't even a wrestler.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Let's not over... I mean, McMahon Austin is this great thing. He had the biggest feud in while the history he was hurt. Of the business. Like he was hurt. Against somebody who wasn't a wrestler.
Okay? Yeah.
Like, that's what this company is built on. But you get all these guys right now in their feeder system, and the way it's been since JR was running it, is they find all these college athletes, whether they're wrestlers or football guys that JR likes or whatever, you know, bodybuilders, strongmen, whatever, and they're like, hey, do you want to be a wrestler? Okay, we'll train you to wrestle and we'll put you on, you know, and it just creates this system, and so many guys get complacent because they get these developmental contracts that are good money, probably better money than they expected to make in doing something else, which breeds complacency.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When you give somebody something like that, you know...
Turns you into WCW.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it doesn't make you hungry. It makes you go, gosh, you know, if I risk moving up and I don't pull it off, they could cut me.
Yeah, these checks might stop.
Yeah.
So if I just hang out, I can hold on for as long as possible.
You know, and I do.
Well, that was exactly the thing with WCW, is they didn't care if you were actually good. They just cared if Vince might want to kind of sign you. They would give you a ton of money just to show up every week.
Yep.
You know? Yep. It's like, as long as you're not stepping on Hogan's toes, do whatever. We don't know or care.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. 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 They didn't care what was going on. Yeah. WCW did that.
Well, Jericho talks about that.
Yeah.
He got so big because he asked for a 30-second promo every night. Asked Eric Bischoff, can I have a 30-second promo? Yeah, nobody's watching anyway.
Yeah.
He was told that, you know, and he said, but people were watching.
Yeah.
And it was the fans.
Yep.
You know? But now, Triple H is starting to bring us back. Now, Triple H, or whoever is running the feeder system now, is starting to take risks on some of these indie guys that they've avoided for years.
Right.
You know, because CM Punk did so well for them. They gave Daniel Bryan a shot, and Cesaro is one of those guys. He worked Ring of Honor as... Help me out, do we know his...
I can't remember.
Oh my gosh. Claudio Castagnoli was his name, you know, but he worked Ring of Honor, and he was an indie guy that they picked up, you know, and they're starting to give these guys chances, and these guys are hungry.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've been in front of 20 people in a gym and still had to go out and put in a good performance. So when you give them, you know, something that's not, you know, so when you give them a mid-card spot in front of 17,000, 17,000,
that's still awesome.
Right.
And they go out there and they tear it up.
Right.
And they chew those, you know, they eat those opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's, you know.
It's been producing some amazing stuff.
It's guys who came up really learning to work a crowd, too. Not guys who were just plucked out of whatever they were doing and thrown in front of
people. You got
a
good body?
Right.
You know, yeah.
Come do this.
Right.
Yeah. That's what typically we get those big bodybuilders. Yep. And they, mm-hmm. there's, you know, we talked about this briefly with Triple H. There are guys who get wrestling, and there are guys who will be, you can train them and train them and train them because they got a good look. They'll never get it.
Yeah.
They'll never grasp wrestling.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just, some people
right
have
back.
It and some people don't.
Yeah.
They're still going to be right back. So some guys get it and some guys don't. And you can always tell
hey,
when there's guys
hey,
who
man,
get it.
Feed him more.
Feed him more. He's not that guy anymore, man. So brings us to the final moments with Cesaro and the Big Show. And we get this amazing moment because Cesaro is so ridiculously strong.
Yeah.
The things that he does sometimes is just amazing. He hoists Big Show up like a body slam, walks over to the ropes.
Yeah, like it ain't nothing.
And just throws him over the top rope body slam style, like it's nothing.
Yeah.
Which is a nice, cool little homage back to the whole Hogan, Andre the Giant thing. But, you know, cranked up a notch because he just picks him up, walks over, slams him over the top rope, wins the Andre Battle Royal. And it's just one of those moments that had everybody jumping out of their seats.
Hey, how much do you think Paul White was like, yeah, that sounds cool, I'll totally do that for you. And then got up on that dude's shoulders and went, I've never done this before.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was just a great moment, though, because the crowd's so excited that he won, and he's got all that emotion, and Big Show shakes his hand.
Yeah,
and
it's a great
just,
moment.
It's such an awesome moment.
Yep.
You know, he hoists that trophy up, and again, we see another future superstar. Boom, right there. So it's awesome stuff. All right, moving on. We got John Cena versus Bray Wyatt. Another up-and-comer.
Yep.
Another guy. Every one of these matches, man.
Man.
Is he Rotundo's kid?
Yes,
Rotundo's
kid.
And he's actually Bo Dallas'
brother.
I was going
to say, him and Bo Dallas are
really?
Both Rotundo's kids.
I did not know that.
Yep. Another guy who's about to get called up here.
Yeah.
But
they've already got his promos running.
Yep. So Bray Wyatt versus John Cena. This is another interesting thing and another kind of great thing for the whole building the new generation, because anybody that knows John Cena's name knows that this dude's pretty much been headlining WrestleManias for quite some time.
Yeah,
close to
a decade. He kind of took a back seat this year.
Yep.
He's doing kind of a mid-card feud, he's doing it to build up a new guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's really, really cool to see.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. Well, but
I've always gotten the impression Cena's loved doing that.
Oh, Cena, I think Cena likes doing that. I also don't mistake that Cena recognizes this as an opportunity for himself. You know, I mean, working with these young guys, and particularly with Bray Wyatt, it's like nothing that he's ever done before.
Yeah,
right.
You know, I mean, I'm a John Cena fan, but I think he gets underrated by all the Cena haters and even by people who are just like, well, it's John Cena, but he's John Cena. You know, but he has been doing very similar stuff for a long time.
Well, and I believe that too, because I have always thought Cena's one of those guys who doesn't get credit for how well he understands what's going on around him.
Yeah.
You know, because like you said, people see him doing kind of similar stuff, so he just becomes, well, Cena, he's Cena.
Yeah.
Cena is what Cena is, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the case.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever he's doing, maybe it's kind of the same to you and me. Maybe it's kind of the same to a lot of the smart marks. It's the biggest thing they have, and it has been for a decade.
Yep.
So he's clearly doing something right.
Right.
And I think he knows exactly what he's doing more often than not.
I agree. Absolutely. So Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt family are another one of these groups or another group of workers who are a new generation of guys who have really been picking up steam. The crowd has really been behind them. They're another one of those, their heel gimmick. It's a heel gimmick.
Right.
But it's such a cool and fun gimmick. It's something fresh and new and
completely different.
Bray Wyatt is so good at it.
Amazing.
He's so great at bringing this character to life that the crowd loves
it. It's just this crazy, like, hillbilly,
cult
possessed
kind of
cult
thing.
Type
hillbilly
thing.
Backwoods
yeah.
swamp. They're from Florida, so they're swamp hillbillies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is especially
hillbilly. Well, now I'm freaked out.
Yeah.
Didn't realize. I thought they were Virginia
yeah.
hillbillies.
No, like
mountain folk.
No, like mountain folk look down on swamp hillbillies.
Wow.
Like
yeah,
down.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like,
worst,
now I don't want to piece
kind
of anymore, you know? But that's the super cool thing about them, though, is like as much as the crowd gets behind them from time to time, especially insane crowds like the Night After Mania crowds, like these guys don't really. They play it perfectly for their gimmicks. Because they don't really play into it. They don't really play out of it. They just keep doing what they're doing, and it just fuels everybody to get bigger on one side or the other, you know?
Absolutely. So these guys, the whole basis for this feud is they were kind of doing the psychological warfare thing with Cena. They were trying to expose him, you know, because he's always been the big superhero, basically, like Hulk Hogan. He's the big superhero, and they're gonna expose him and show the world that he's not as strong as he says he is. He's not as good as he says he is. All that good stuff.
He's a liar.
He's a liar. Yeah, yep. That's what they're gonna do. That's the whole basis for this feud. And so John Cena, like, I love the buildup for it because they even had Cena get rattled by these guys. Yeah. Like, he was starting to kind of get a little scared. He was getting a little shook up. And it's always nice to see that kind of emotion going into a feud. Yeah. And not him just doing his typical make a bunch of jokes thing that he usually does.
It's like you said, he's doing something
completely different.
He's never done stuff like this.
But, like, his whole thing was his legacy's on the line here. He's got to protect his legacy. He's got to show that he can overcome. Because that's what he's all about, is overcoming. Yeah. He always overcomes. So these guys have a pretty good match. I don't know, I felt like, you know, it's one of those ones where I look back on it and I think I liked it more than I liked it while I was watching it. Because I really like both these guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I was expecting something a little grander than we got. It was
weirdly worked, but not necessarily poorly worked. And not necessarily bad. Just,
like, it wasn't bad. And I knew as soon as it ended that it wasn't bad. Yeah. I just felt like, I don't know, like I was like, that doesn't feel as big as I thought it was going to be. But then the more you think back on it, the more you reflect on it, you're like, actually, I think they worked that perfect for the story.
Exactly.
Yeah. Especially if this is just a stepping stone in the story, and it's not the end of the story.
Which I think it is.
Yeah, exactly. I think it is, and it was far more storytelling than payoff match.
Right.
And once again, not something you necessarily see a lot of out of Cena.
Right,
you know?
Right,
but very well worked, because they did put that whole, I mean, Bray Wyatt started that match on his knees telling Cena to end him.
Yeah.
It was like a Darth Vader type thing almost, you know.
And he did that kind of stuff
like
the whole
to the
match.
Dark side.
Yeah.
You know? Do some terrible stuff to me so everybody can watch you do it.
Uh huh.
And I'll just sit here and let it happen.
Yeah.
You know? And Cena had to keep fighting away from getting nuts on this dude.
Yeah, like Bray kept presenting him with opportunities to do terrible things to him. And Cena had to resist. He had to fight the urge to hurt Bray Wyatt like that.
Yeah.
That was a really cool story.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, the whole end of that match was fantastic because, like, Bray grabs this chair, throws it down on the ground at the fallen Cena, who he's down on the ground, gets on his knees, and he's just like, go ahead, take me out with this chair. And you have that moment where Cena picks up the chair, and he's all slow, and he's looking at the chair, and he's looking at Bray, and he's really thinking about doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just one of those really cool moments.
He wants to do it. And that's, I mean, it was totally the whole Luke going to the dark side, you know.
Absolutely.
The Emperor trying to lure him over.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly what it
totally
was.
That's totally what it was.
In wrestling.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it even better now.
Yeah. And that's why when I was watching, you know, I was like, man, this is not Daniel Bryan Triple H.
No.
You know, this is not like a classic for the ages matchwork-wise.
Not a classic.
Exactly.
Right.
But the story was very cool.
It was good.
And eventually, and I think there's a very good chance this match will be on next year's Mania as well.
Ooh, you think it'll be that long of a kind of an off and on feud this year? It's building to something bigger.
Yeah. I kind of feel.
And
like
even
it's
if it's not
cool.
that long, even if it's a SummerSlam or a whatever Backlash is now, even if it's
not
like pretty soon,
it'd have to be a SummerSlam thing.
Yeah.
You know?
If they built a SummerSlam, that'd be cool, I think. But I really
think pay per views are going to look different this year.
With me on the network,
I think I can't predict what I mean by that.
Well, pay-per-views are going to look like Raws. They already do.
I can predict that that's not what I meant by that.
Well, oh, really? Well, that's what they are. Well, if you guys haven't noticed, back last year, at some point, Vince announced he had like a press conference, or it was on last year's. They do the big call because they're public now, so they do the big conference call with all their investors or whatever. And at that last year, Vince said that this year the company is switching to focus from selling pay-per-views to now their focus is ratings. And it's, you know, like there's been a lot more, like a lot of big main events happening on Raws.
Uh-huh.
And they still, like the pay-per-views are still like presented as like this next level thing. But when you actually watch the pay-per-views, there's not as much, like, storylines don't wrap up there as much. They're furthered. And storylines, you know, big matches happen there.
But also now all of a sudden you see a lot of like little matches get thrown on that weren't announced. You know, like I remember in particular there was like a Tons of Funk tag match on one of the pay-per-views last year that I was just like, why? This is like a Raw match. What do we
Sounds like one to remember.
But, I mean, I think that's what we're going to start seeing a little more. And we will see. I mean, I know what you're talking about, too, with more of like the analytical stuff and that kind of stuff. And making...
I just get the feeling like, and again, I can't put a specific description to it, but with all the stuff that the network can do, I feel like anytime they need a big event match, they can have it, even if it's a weaker pay-per-view.
Right. You know? Yeah.
All right, so Cena and Wyatt. Cena ends up overcoming. He goes over. Like, it was a decent match, and I'm excited to see where the story goes, for sure. I think it's going to be something that's going to build up to something
even bigger.
I think that's
what threw a lot of people, too, is I think some of the ho-hum attitude was like, oh, it's just
well,
Cena
I think
go
a lot
over.
Of people...
But it wasn't just another Cena go
no,
over.
No, it know? Wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't. It felt different. And a lot of times we kind of fall into that hole, well, WrestleMania is sort of like the season finale, and a new season's going to start tomorrow. So I think a lot of people just expect everything to wrap up.
Yeah.
Doesn't
yeah.
always work that way. Right. Sometimes new stories do build from it, and sometimes stories continue after it.
Yep.
And this is one of those cases, I think, for sure. All right, next up on the card is going to be an interesting one to discuss. The Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar. All right, let me go ahead and start.
The How I Met Your Mother of WrestleMania.
The How I Met Your Mother of WrestleMania match.
Sorry, I
just listen
to
you.
There. No,
all
that
right.
makes sense. I liked it.
First of all, for anybody who may not know, or if you haven't really kept up with wrestling a lot, The Undertaker at WrestleMania has really become a big deal over the course of the last several years. Undertaker is undefeated at WrestleMania. He was 21-0 going into this Mania. So for 21 years, Undertaker has not been pinned at a WrestleMania. And this has almost sort of become a title in itself, where every year there's always a big storyline building to who's going to beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania and end the streak. That's always a thing. Mm-hmm. And for the past several years, it's been one of the best parts of WrestleMania because Undertaker shows up. He's at a point now where he essentially only works WrestleMania every year, but always pulls out all stops, has an amazing match, or at least a really good match.
Even when it can't be good. Even H-Taker 3
right.
was super good.
Seven years in a row, he's stolen the show.
Yeah. And it's been absolutely amazing.
You remember when the streak was like 12-0 and it was ridiculous?
Well, they didn't even really start the streak thing until 25.
Yeah, they didn't. I mean, it's one of those things that just they kind of pull out of nowhere, and they're like, well, oh, this guy, he's undefeated.
Yeah.
Now someone is going to try to beat it. You
know? Like, they didn't make it about the streak,
right?
But they always brought it up.
Yeah, they always brought up the streak. And yes, I do remember when it was like 12.
Yeah. You're like, wow, 12 times. That's nuts.
Yeah, that's crazy. You know? So 21-0 going into this. He's taking on Brock Lesnar. Now, Lesnar is... another guy who's kind of a part-timer right now. He's one of those guys who he started out with the WWE. He actually was pretty over when he was back then.
Yeah, he had a really good
run.
2-year run.
Left the WWE back then to basically do an MMA career. And if anybody follows...
Oh, no.
Oh, he did football first, didn't he?
He left to go and try and do football.
Football.
Yeah, he went to go and fail at football.
Yeah, he went to go
spectacularly.
And fail.
Yeah,
I'll give him that, but
I don't even know how spectacular
he didn't make.
It was.
He barely made training camp.
It's not like, hey, I mean, I'm saying it's not like
as soon as they were allowed to cut
like,
people, they cut him.
It's not but it's not like there was something spectacular. You know, he didn't get tackled and his head popped off, and he, you know, what I mean, like
how much different would our world be then? say that the match was against like Paul Heyman's surrogate instead of saying it was against
Brock
Lesnar?
No, we gotta come back to that.
All right, fine.
So he did have an MMA career. He did the UFC thing. So a lot of people know Brock Lesnar's name because of stuff like that. Either you know him from wrestling, you know him from UFC, whatever. He made his return to WWE last year.
Yeah.
And it's kind of done after Mania.
Yeah.
Right?
No,
two years ago after Mania. Yep. Has done a very part-time schedule since then because he's one of those guys who was able to come back and basically make his own kind of contract deal.
Yeah, man, he lucked out.
Dude, he did.
He's
luck
so
out.
Lucked out. Because, see, he's in this such a rare situation because he was not, like, a wrestling legend.
Right.
He was a big...
He got booed out of his last match.
Yeah, he was a great big flash in the pan.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
But, like, being a big flash in the pan and leaving while he was still on top, he was able to go into MMA, and because people knew him from WWE, he was a huge pay-per-view draw, and he did some of the biggest pay-per-views that UFC ever had.
Yeah.
Okay, even though he lost most of them.
Yeah.
He was still a huge pay-per-view draw. Turn around, he was able to funnel that into now he's got this brand.
Yeah.
So when he comes back to the WWE, he's never actually done anything to make himself like this great big star. He just happened to, you know, fumble into, like, now he's this tested, tried and true pay-per-view brand. And so he can, you know, basically negotiate with the WWE, like, I only want this many dates and I want this much money. And so now he's this big brand for the company.
Right, right. So he's kind of, he's come back and he's only had a handful of matches, it feels like, since he's been back.
No, he really only has.
He's had like five or something crazy.
It's funny,
he's actually
like the epitome of the bad of all this change we're talking about and all these new hungry guys. He's like the exact opposite of all that.
Right. But there was this moment that happened several years ago where Undertaker and Brock Lesnar kind of had a bit of a face-off at a UFC event.
Yep.
And that has kind of sparked this whole thought that the Undertaker and Brock Lesnar don't like each other and that they're going to have this match. And seriously, for the last 3 years or whatever, people have thought Brock Lesnar and Undertaker was happening at Mania.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like this year, it's finally happening.
Yep.
As it turns out, I mean, like, they don't really hate each other. I think, in fact, they're kind of buddies. I think they bond over their, like, love for MMA and UFC.
Oh, yeah, because Taker's a huge UFC fan.
Huge UFC fan.
I mean, he's been one of the most, like, contemporarily, he's the only one who cares about maintaining his character. And you don't see Undertaker out of gimmick, out of character. He doesn't do, you know, he doesn't really do interviews.
Right.
He doesn't, you don't see him walking around. You know what I mean? Like, you just don't see that he doesn't have a DVD detailing his career
and where
he talks about coming up and being Mean Mark at WCW. He has been the Undertaker for 24 years, and that's it.
Right.
Except when they turn the cameras on at a UFC show and you see him in the crowd and, you know,
yeah,
marking out like a little kid for Anderson Silva. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's his one thing.
That's his thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've even read stuff that says that whole little showdown with him and Brock at a UFC show was specifically to plant a seed for a match because he's been wanting to do this. He's been wanting to have a match with Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
So this was his call, most likely. This was his call. He wanted to wrestle Brock Lesnar at this show. He'd been wanting to do this. It finally happened.
Yep.
So we go into this match. Streak is on the line against Brock Lesnar, who's been spending all this time saying, you know, that he's going to end the streak. He's going to end the streak. Let me go ahead.
Heyman has been saying he's going to end the streak.
Oh, yeah. Heyman,
thankfully, Lesnar's been saying very little.
Yes. Yeah. Heyman is his manager, who is spectacular, by the way. I absolutely adore Paul Heyman.
Paul Heyman is the greatest talker this business has ever known.
Absolutely.
And ever.
He's amazing. He is amazing. So let me go ahead and start by letting people know, if they don't already know, how big of a mark I am for The Undertaker.
Like a super mark.
Okay, if you already talked about Hogan being like your childhood hero or whatever with wrestling. Mine has always been The Undertaker. Always. He was the guy who, when I first turned wrestling on and saw him, I was mesmerized by, and I spent my whole childhood loving Taker, or from the time he was in the WWF, loving the Taker, have always marked out for him. And even, you know, in my years of being a wrestler myself, he's always been that guy that I could totally turn kid mode on for and love. I really like The Undertaker. Love the character. It's just been icing on the cake, the fact that he's actually such a good worker and actually comes in and has such great matches every year, because I have that much more reason than want to watch him work. So, talking about the streak, I have really kind of teetered back and forth on if I ever wanted to see the streak end.
Right.
Part of me felt like he's already gone 21 years winning, he should just keep it.
Yep.
Nobody should beat the streak. Nobody's going to be able to live up to what beating the streak would do for them anyway. Might as well let this guy go out on top and keep the streak. You brought up some good points while we were having this discussion, though, where it is kind of one of those things where typically when a wrestler does retire and he leaves the business, it's sort of the right thing to do to go out on your back.
Right.
So when he does get to that moment when he wants to retire, he should put somebody over.
Yes.
Somebody should beat him and end the streak. And I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
You know, I feel that
Taker's old school, I think he wants that.
I think he would want that too. Absolutely.
You know, and I also think, too, that, you know, the streak has become kind of hindering to Taker.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, think about this. I mean, this whole year, is even from last year, when we started talking about potentials to take on the streak for this year, what have we been saying? Well, this guy, he's not going to end the streak, though. Well, this guy,
right.
He's not
going to
end the streak, though. Even when they announced Brock Lesnar, we instantly went, yeah, cool, but he's not going to end the
streak.
No
way he's going to end
the streak.
Yeah,
it's not going to be Brock
Lesnar.
Exactly. You know, and that's not good business. You know, even though the business is fake, predetermined, whatever you want to call it, you know, that's not good business. You know, if you know absolute that nobody's going to beat this thing or this guy's not going to win, you know, it takes you out of it, even when it's Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker.
Yeah, it does.
It takes you out of
it. And I get that point, because it's one of those things where the more we think about it, because we were even trying to debate who we would like to see beat the streak or who he could face next. And we've mentioned John Cena a whole bunch, but just because that'd be something neat to see a Cena versus Taker at Mania, but do we even want Cena to win it, or should Cena win it? You know, it's just... It has gotten to that point. Like, the streak has almost gotten too big.
Yes. Like, it's outgrown itself.
It's outgrown itself. And you also think of, like, well, he should give it to an up-and-comer. It should be somebody who could take it and run with it. But how risky is that, too? Like, what if you let some rookie beat it, and then that dude's gone in a year?
Yep.
Or the crowd doesn't like him or get him, or he doesn't get it. I mean, there's...
Yeah.
You've got random dude who beat the streak who you're never going to mention again because he fizzled out. You know, I mean, it's risky.
Yeah.
So it's. I mean, there's so many different reasons to go into it to talk about it. So, getting right into this match, the unthinkable happened. I'd say the most shocking WrestleMania moment I would say in recent history. Brock Lesnar beats The Undertaker and breaks the streak.
Judging by the 75,000 memes that showed up on the internet right
and you know
afterwards,
what?
Yes, I agree.
It wasn't even just that friggin' arena. It got dead silent in Jaren's house.
Yep.
That the 1-2-3 hit, and first of all, this moment was kind of epic because the 3 count hits, and they didn't just immediately start playing Brock Lesnar's music. Instead, it was just dead silent.
Except for Paul Heyman.
The arena fell silent. Well, Paul Heyman looked like shocked.
Yeah, but he slid like, in screaming, oh my God.
Yeah,
oh my God.
He's screaming, oh my God. Like, he shocked his own guy just beat The Undertaker.
Yeah.
Brock Lesnar looked shocked. Yeah. Like, he couldn't believe he had just done it. I stared. I just stared blankly at the TV because I didn't believe that this was really happening.
Lesnar looked more surprised than he did at, what was it, 19?
When he did the shooting star.
When he shooting star onto his head.
Yeah.
And didn't know who he was for 2 days.
We couldn't believe it. We sat there.
It was an amazing moment.
It was ridiculous. And I instantly got mad. I mean, I was just mad. I was so mad. And obviously the mark in me definitely came out here. There's no doubt about it. But also the fact that, like, it wasn't a good match.
It was
not at all.
It was a bad match.
That's the worst part by far.
I mean, I was worried about that already with Lesnar going in.
I was super worried.
Well, like you said, you were worried about them just trying to do UFC stuff all the time, which doesn't work in wrestling,
no.
I don't feel.
Yeah. No. It failed when Brock and Cena tried to do it in Brock's first match back.
Yeah.
It failed with good workers.
Yeah.
CM Punk and Undertaker. When CM Punk was first on his rise and he was doing the Straight Edge Society thing,
right?
You know, he's a very martial arts, you know, submission based style,
right?
And Taker had these matches with them, and they were just that garbage, and they weren't good matches. And both those guys are phenomenal workers,
right?
But they just weren't good matches.
Yeah, man. So the match wasn't good, and it was just one of those moments where it was so shocking, like. None of us expected Brock Lesnar to beat the streak.
No.
The match was terrible. I already wasn't a big fan of Brock Lesnar. I didn't feel like he should be the guy to beat the streak. Going back to our conversation before, we don't know who should beat the streak, but I didn't think Brock Lesnar should have.
Right.
So I was just angry.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody that follows me on Twitter or Facebook saw me have an outburst. And I don't do that ever. I had an outburst. I was mad. I mean, I was just tweeting and Facebooking and going crazy because I was mad. I mean, I was so angry. Like, it really killed my mood for It took a while for me to get back into the show.
Well, and that's I think it killed everybody's mood, which is why, thank God, Divas, you know?
I mean, yeah, right? That moment, we really needed the Diva buffer.
Yeah.
Because, dude, it was heartbreaking. It was just like, it was like somebody we knew died. That's what it felt like. It was, the streak is over. And
well, you know what? I got to say, that was a WrestleMania moment like no other.
No other.
You know, I mean, absolutely. I mean, and I think we all kind of thought, like, you know, oh, when the streak ends, we won't have, you know, we won't have the streak WrestleMania moments. Well, the streak ending gave us one of the most unique and great. I mean, you know, everybody in that arena, you know, and not just everybody in that arena fell silent, and everybody in that arena was shocked. Like, they panned the crowd for a good minute, and 70,000 people were doing their O face. I mean, everybody.
Yeah. It was amazing. And, I have never seen a reaction
dead
like
silent.
That.
I mean, they did ever. It. You know, they didn't play the music for a few minutes.
Oh, dude, yeah.
You know, they just
let it be dead silent. Just let it sink in.
Yeah, you know, they just let it simmer. And it was the world stopped for that. Mm-hmm. You know.
You're like looking at the entryway like somebody's got to come out and do something about this, right?
And I hate
like somebody's coming in to change this decision or something? Like, what's going on
because
here?
Because it's wrestling,
like,
so you do. You think that for... Because there are so many times in wrestling where you go, there's no way I just saw what I just saw.
Yeah. Like
and
that
then, you know, a few seconds later, somehow you didn't.
Well, and you just start going...
Oh, for a second.
Yeah.
And so this one, like, 20 seconds goes by, and you're like, guys, you're running out of time.
Yeah. Like, something's happening,
you
right?
Know, yeah. Somebody, yeah.
You start cycling through all the different scenarios, like, this had to be a screw-up.
Yeah.
This is a mess-up. He wasn't supposed to lay down.
Right.
You know,
something like that. And,
like,
you know,
the
I'm
ref
not...
messed that up, or he didn't kick out.
Yeah.
Or you're thinking of all these crazy scenarios.
Yeah,
like,
your brain just starts thinking through.
This did not just happen. There is no way this happened. And then when you finally realize it did, it's just like, oh my God.
I hate it. I hate myself. And mostly I hate you, Jaren, for the fact that it's 48 hours removed now, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
That's the problem, dude. Like, that's not a problem.
I still hate Lesnar. I'm not sure if I could go back and rewrite it myself, if that's what I would have done. But I kind of almost think that maybe it would be.
So,
because knowing everything that I know... Maybe that is the exact way it needed to be.
Exactly.
And you always find a way to take these terrible things and make sense of them.
Hey, you're the best.
And it's frustrating.
No, it's good though. You look at things from different angles.
Yeah, it's awesome.
We
that's
all do
sort
that
of though, my point,
right?
Yeah.
It's good to look at different sides of the coin sometimes and study it and find different.
Just quit being so positive.
Well, now that I've had some time to let it sink in, plus you know, it's one of those things, too, that, you know, I immediately wanted to go read everything I could find about it. Like, as soon as information starts coming out about this, I want to know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I need to know
Vince better call me directly.
Vince better let me know, because my guy just lost to WrestleMania, and I'm really sad right now. But, you know, we start finding out. I mean, first of all, like we mentioned, most likely, this was Undertaker's choice. I mean, I have no doubt in my mind that Undertaker had the say in who and when the streak ended. I have no doubt in my mind.
Which there was, like, that part I knew immediately. There was still a part of me, especially when I was furious, that went, but I don't care.
Maybe
that wasn't Undertaker's choice doesn't make it not terrible.
But that's more directed at everybody who started blaming WWE Creative for making a bad decision.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me tell you this much.
I bet Creative...
Let me tell you this much. If Creative goes to Taker and goes, hey, you're losing to Lesnar, and Taker didn't want to,
it's not happening.
He's going to go, nope.
I bet they didn't even know. I guarantee this is... And from the reports I've read, this is one of those things where, like, maybe two or three people knew the end of this match.
Yeah.
I bet Taker and Brock and Vince and maybe one other guy knew how this match was going to end.
I'm pretty sure Brock thinks it's all real anyway, but they had to tell Heyman.
I bet they didn't tell Heyman. I bet that was a genuine reaction.
Oh my God.
Well, yeah. nobody likes Heyman, so nobody wanted to talk to him.
Hey, Heyman.
I love Heyman.
I'm jumping ahead just slightly, but Heyman kept coming out yesterday and going, you know, John Layfield and these other two clowns you have announcing over there, I was dying every time.
He's amazing. Man, so then you also start reading about some of the other crazy stuff, though. Like, Undertaker got hurt in this match.
Yeah.
And we talk about how the match was, it was bad. It was really sloppy.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like a typical big moment WrestleMania match.
Right. Well, it was nothing Taker's ever done before.
No, it really wasn't.
And I didn't notice where he got hurt. I need to watch it again, because normally I notice that stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I noticed right away, like, after it happened, I was really thinking, like, you know, he didn't go for his dive. He didn't do this. He didn't do that. You know, he didn't do any of the stuff that he normally does. And it made me wonder if maybe he hadn't gotten a Mania physical that said, "Oh man, you don't have any hips in there anymore.
Careful."
Yeah, you know what I mean. That kind of thing. Like,
but apparently he got concussed almost immediately into the match at some point. I think it was like the stuff I was reading was saying it was probably on like the leg takedown on the outside or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. He hit his head. He got concussed, a severe concussion.
Yeah.
Went to the hospital that night because apparently it was to the point where he doesn't actually remember really having that match.
Mm.
He was lost in the match. He kept asking Brock, "What are we doing in here?
Yeah.
What's next? What are we doing?" That's kind of a scary thought
there. Like, and thinking back to it, knowing that stuff, that does kind of make a little bit more
sense. It makes
sense,
a little more sense why the match went the way it
like
did.
Like, he's so programmed to get done what he needs to get done, but he was not himself.
But he ended up, like, after the match, like, and then, that doesn't mean that he was supposed to win, because that's not the case. He was
no,
supposed to
win. No, and that's not what we're saying. Yeah,
he was
definitely going out on his back. It just shouldn't have been a sucker.
It shouldn't have been as bad as it was.
Yeah,
and I guess as soon as he got backstage, he collapsed, and the paramedics had to come to his aid.
Vince went with him.
Yep.
Left Mania.
Yep. Vince McMahon got in the ambulance with The Undertaker and went to the hospital.
Yep.
Left Mania.
Which, after 30 years, I guarantee that dude's been out of the building for two matches total, and they were the last two matches of this one, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing. So, It's interesting. Like, he just got released from the hospital, had a severe concussion, so that definitely played into it. So, this really kind of begs the question, was that Undertaker's last match? Or do we think that he's going to try to pull out at least one more now?
I think he probably will pull out one more.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was probably the plan from the get-go. I don't think, I think Taker's going to watch that match and go, "Man, that sucked." I don't think his plan was, I don't think that'll change his decision. I think he'll come back. I think probably for Mania, he'll come back. If not before, who knows what his plan is, I don't know. But I think at least he will be back to try and avenge the streak.
Yeah.
Or to make another appearance and go out, whether he wins or loses that, whatever the case
is.
An actual farewell match. Because, and this is the thing, the other reason that I decided that I became an advocate for ending the streak, because Taker deserves to be remembered as more than the streak.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if Taker, that's become, he only shows up for Mania, he only comes in and does Mania and does the streak now for the last 5 years, that's really all he does. And if he had just gone and won, he wins a match, he wins the streak, and then he leaves, like, then he is the streak. And that's what he'll be remembered for. And he deserves to be remembered for so much more than that, because he's Undertaker.
Right,
you know,
absolutely.
Now he's got the chance to come back and be Taker and still be a huge star and still be a huge draw, even though the streak is over.
Right.
You know, whether it's Mania, Survivor Series, whatever he comes back at. And he gets to show, hey, you know what, I'm this guy. I'm not the streak. I'm this guy. And remember me as this guy.
This isn't to argue your point at all, because I think you're 100% right. This is just more out of curiosity. I'm trying to remember properly. Last year, didn't he randomly do like two or three SmackDown matches with the Shield after Mania?
He stuck around
for about a month after.
Yeah, I just remember being really bizarre.
Yep.
And then it just kind of ended. And then, so like you said, and that's still exactly your point. He's around for Mania season. Does his little shtick, and then he's gone until the next year. That just flew into my head, and I was like, wait, did I imagine that?
Yep.
I do, I do feel like that maybe this might have been, like he thought that this would probably be his retirement match. I think that was a potential possibility. You even kind of brought up before, when we were talking about it personally, that that's kind of the same way Stone Cold retired.
Yes.
He didn't tell anybody, he didn't really make a big deal about it, he went out, he had that match.
And that
he knew that was going to be his last match, and then he just left.
Yep.
He went away. And Taker might have kind of wanted to do the same thing.
Yeah.
He might have just said, well, I'll go up there, I'll have this match with Brock I've always wanted to have, I'll go ahead and let him beat me, and then I'll call it a day.
Yeah.
You know, I'll have one last fun match at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
But I do kind of feel like now, seeing the way it went down, knowing he got hurt, he didn't really get to enjoy his last match.
Right.
I kind of feel like he's going to look back on it and say, well, it'd be nice to actually be able to remember my last match.
Yeah, plan A.
Or am I actually be able to, like, you know, at least be able to be out there and enjoy what I'm doing one last time.
Plan B.
So I do kind of feel like a farewell match is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been so much speculation and build up to a Sting versus Undertaker match.
Yeah.
Sting is finally apparently on board with the company. He's officially said that he's going to be at WrestleMania 31. The company itself hasn't announced it, but Sting is telling people. So it's probably going to happen. And Sting versus Undertaker is sort of one of those last dream matches, I guess. Yep. Like, it's never happened. It's something everybody's always wanted to see.
If those... Well, they're the two guys. You kind of look at them from opposite perspective. Like, Undertaker is the guy that has been a WWE guy since Hogan was there.
Yep.
And he didn't waver, he didn't move, he didn't entertain other offers, he didn't think about going and becoming the mortician at WCW, you know, or something like that. Yep. Like he was there. And Sting has always been the not WWE guy, you know, and has always said, nope, not gonna happen, not gonna work for Vince, not gonna do this, not gonna do their Shock TV, you know, but still a huge star.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes has bounced back and forth, and, you know, anybody else you can name has bounced back and forth.
Right. So, if they build to a WrestleMania 31 match as a farewell match for both of those guys, they go in there, it's we know it's both of their last match ever.
Right.
I think that could be a pretty epic moment.
Yeah, I hope they do a double down and the lights go out and then they're just both gone.
They just vanish?
Yeah.
They just vanish.
Yeah. Just do something real spooky at the end. Because who goes out on your back in that one?
Yeah, I know,
right? If you
both
want to go out on your back, you know? Yeah.
I don't know. I think that'd be a lot of fun. So that's just...
I'd like to see that match.
I think that'd be cool.
And I'm not a fan of either man. Specifically.
I don't know much about Sting. I just know that I think that'd be cool. Like, I never really watched a lot of WCW.
You got the network.
I know. I'm watching... I was going to say this stuff. I've been watching...
There's a bunch of terrible pay-per-views you can go watch.
I know.
He might have done cool stuff.
That's a story for another day, for sure.
And Sting really is a shiny match.
Yeah. Like, him and Jerry, I'm like, there was good things that came out of WCW. I'm not saying he was terrible in those papers.
There was Sting.
All right.
Jericho.
So, Taker and Lesnar.
Did you roll your eyes, Jericho?
It was absolutely one of the most shocking moment I've ever experienced in wrestling.
Then some Divas happened, and main event.
Yep, I was going to say. So that's going to bring us to that Divas Invitational title match, where they all got in the ring together at the same time. It was one fall, and AJ retained.
Which was incredible for a Divas match, because it was not a total train wreck.
We expected it to be. We didn't know how all those chicks were going to be in the ring at the same time for a one-fall match.
Right.
Without there just being total chaos and everybody getting hurt and, you know, just...
And it being terrible.
Yeah. And
but it wasn't. And that's all we need to say.
It wasn't that bad.
Yeah,
and
that's it.
Honestly, at this point, I wasn't paying much attention. I was just like...
I feel like I accidentally specifically rushed us out of the end of our Taker segment just so we could hurry through the Divas match and not talk about it. And now here we are.
Yep.
Just talking about it.
Well, that's just to spite you.
Sorry, Taker.
Sorry.
That's just to spite you, John.
No. All right. Well, let's go ahead and talk about the main event then so we can wrap this whole thing up. So that's the WWE World Title match between Randy Orton and the winner of the Royal Rumble, Batista, and now inserted in, Daniel Bryan. So
I hurt Daniel Bryan.
An injured Daniel Bryan, because Triple H had jumped him.
Yeah.
Several times. After the last match. Right. So, this has been a really, really interesting build. And we've talked about this, you know, quite a bit now, the whole build-up for this. But it was interesting, too, because remember, Batista won the Royal Rumble. The fans turned on him because they didn't want him to win the Royal Rumble. They ended up being forced to make this guy heel because he was supposed to come in and be the big celebrity face. This is a big return. He's going to go on to Mania. He's going to win the title.
And it was all on track until Rumble.
Until Rumble.
He came out. They cheered him. They loved him. He, you know, beat up...
They were juiced to see him.
Yeah, he beat up Del Rio a couple times. Everybody was excited.
Yep. Then he won that Rumble and it wasn't Daniel Bryan and they were mad.
For the record, I'm not even 1,000% sure that it was because he won it and Daniel Bryan didn't, or if it was simply because Daniel Bryan didn't even show up in the Rumble, and that's when people went bananas.
Because
people were still cheering him, if I remember correctly, when he came out. It wasn't until 30 hit and Ray came out, and that place came unglued and hated everyone.
Yes. Yep. It could have been much different if Daniel Bryan had just been in there.
Yeah. If Bryan had come out and somebody else had eliminated him, I think Batista would still be a face right now.
Yeah, that's...
But they didn't even send him because people were ready when 30 hit. Because everybody, as people do, everyone forgot Mysterio existed.
Yeah.
So 30 hits, they're all like, yeah, and they're all like, Daniel Bryan, is it a mask? Oh, it's Mysterio.
Hey, did that guy get put in a situation where he got booed again on Raw or what?
Yeah, man.
Dude, they keep doing that to Ray.
Oh, come on. It's just time for Ray to hang it up. They thought Ray was, like Ray Mysterio was the guy that you couldn't turn heel.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I mean, even WCW took off his mask and he was still awesome.
Yeah.
To the fans. Yeah, I hate Ray Mysterio. But, you know, now it's just time. Like, people are sick of him. It's the same old thing. He can't, he's not good.
Well, and he keeps getting hurt. Every time he comes back, he's gone again with another injury. Yeah. You know? I mean, he's just one of those guys.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, he's hurting real bad.
So we got Orton and Batista have both been big heels in this, and Orton's the champion, and Batista thinks he deserves the title because he won the Rumble. And
these
now,
guys have been great in this story, too.
They really have.
Yeah.
They really have. Absolutely.
Like, everybody's turned it up.
Yeah.
It's been awesome. It's been so much fun to watch. So, thoughts on this triple threat?
Awesome.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah. Just such a well, I mean, and triple threats, they're one of those types of matches that are, in my opinion, often entertaining, rarely good.
Yeah.
You know, like, I always have fun watching a bunch of mayhem in there, but you actually, like, analyze a lot of these matches, it's just a bunch of mayhem.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it's hard to get that really competitive feel.
Yeah. Right,
when you have to take time, when you have to...
You can't make it not look spotty.
Right.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. It yeah. does,
so,
it
like, it's
tough.
Fun, but it's, you know, it just adds to the, you know you're watching a work.
Yes.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
But these guys, I think, did a bang-up job flowing most of this together.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The thing I think that stands out, the thing that stood out the most to me was that these guys, okay, because the crowd was still, the Divas match was not long enough for the crowd to recover.
From the Undertaker thing.
Yeah.
I was with them.
Yeah.
Because when this match started, as much as I love Daniel Bryan, as much as I was ready to see the story played out,
yep.
that Taker loss killed my momentum.
Yeah.
I was down.
Yep.
So,
and the whole crowd was that way. And even, you know, I mean, 2 hours earlier, Daniel Bryan had come out and 75,000+ people were doing the yes chant with him. They were not.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some. He still got a great reaction and there were still people doing
it. It wasn't like it was earlier.
But though. It wasn't like it was earlier, and you could tell the crowd was just not there. And when the match started, the crowd was just not there. And Daniel, all three of those guys, you know, I mean, I've seen it happen on an indie level and I've perceived it happening on that level where sometimes the crowd's not reacting the right way, and the guys don't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
And they panic, or they try to change what they're doing, or they try to change the game plan, or they just don't roll with it, and the match suffers, and then they get freaked out even more.
Right.
You know, and they just don't know how to handle it. And these guys knew how to handle it.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
And these guys soldiered through it.
Pros, dude.
Yeah.
They're utter, pros.
Total pros. And you say what you want. You know, I talk bad about Randy Orton routinely because it's fun. You know, and Dave Batista's
been
gone.
We wrestled his dad once.
We did.
That's cool. We're cool with the Orton family.
Yeah. You know, and Dave Batista's been gone for, what, 5 years?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know.
Yeah.
And,
well, he's playing like the part-time, you know.
Yeah,
like,
you know, he's been gone for 5 years, and now he's a part-timer. And this is, you know, really kind of his first match. I mean, he's had matches on Raw and stuff, but this is the main event of Mania.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
But total pro. Randy Orton, total pro. Daniel Bryan, obviously, total pro. They stuck to the plan. They didn't panic. They did what they did, and they got that crowd back.
They did.
Yep.
They got it back. Well, and it starts getting a little bit more exciting, too, when you see, because Triple H and Steph interfered.
Yep.
They ran out. They replaced the ref with their ref, who if you've been following the storyline, this was their ref that kind of screwed Bryan over in the past a couple times.
Yep.
So they inserted this ref into the match, and Daniel Bryan ends up knocking that dude out and throwing him out of the ring. And then he does a dive on top of the ref and Steph and H, which is a big pop moment, you know, because this is a no DQ match. So he can't even get disqualified for that. And so now you're watching him taking out H again, taking out Steph, taking out this, you know, this ref who's on their pay or whatever, you know, and he doesn't care. He's still fighting. He's still in this fight. He's determined to win. And that's when you really, I think that was kind of the moment when the crowd's really like, we're back behind this guy again.
Right.
Let's see this happen.
Oh yeah.
Everybody got reminded.
It's like they came to see the streak and they wanted to see the streak, but like, well, I said that wrong. Like they were looking forward to the streak. They wanted to see the streak, but then they remember that they came to see Daniel Bryan.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like that's what they were there for.
So, man, we get to this spot, which is pretty amazing because now Orton and Batista, they're on the same page. They're like, we've got to take care of Bryan, and they start really double teaming Bryan. We get this nasty spot, this table spot on the outside, where Batista's up on the table, picks Bryan up for the Batista bomb, and as he's bringing him down, Orton hits the RKO on him, essentially, backwards.
Yeah, like a reverse one. Yeah.
A reverse RKO on Bryan, so it's this massive double team move through the table, really nasty. Turns out to be a little more nasty for Orton than anybody, because he takes a flat bump on a monitor, which looks terrible. Oh my God. I don't know how he got up after that. It looked bad. But they do this whole stretcher deal then, where Bryan gets stretchered.
Yeah.
And they start carting Bryan out. Now Orton and Batista are just back to fighting themselves.
Yep.
And it's one of those moments where you're just like, no. No.
This is not going to end this
way. You can't end it like that. You can't take Bryan out of there.
But Taker just lost, so anything can happen.
Anything. Yeah, no exactly. Taker just lost. This could really be happening right now. But man, then you see Bryan starts fighting off the paramedics. And he pulls the straps off. And he gets off the stretcher. And man, the crowd is just really eating this up.
Yep.
And they're back into it. And he just drags himself back into the match. And he just, you know, he starts fighting at it again. And... you know, we have some amazing that spot at the end was just such a great.
I don't even remember it. But
like the actual go home or
the go home spot was fantastic. Yeah,
was that the one you're talking about? Or you're talking about something different?
I just because they did a whole bunch of near falls and then you know back and forth, lots of near falls, and then you see Bryan hit the running knee on Batista. And he doesn't just pin him, he wraps him up in the yes lock.
Yep.
Right.
We get that big shot of him holding him in the yes lock right there in the ring, and Batista taps.
Yep.
And Daniel Bryan...
awesome, like, how flawless was the lead up to that,
too. My God, it was so... The buildup was just amazing, you know? And
because that in and out, and, you know, because he had just hit Orton with that knee, and then Batista just chucked him out and tried to steal the pin and everything like that.
Man. Oh, all of it was so great, dude. And then, man, that moment hits where Batista starts tapping, and the crowd immediately jumps up to their feet.
Yeah.
And, you know, then we get the amazing moment where Bryan's...
And, you know, props to Big Dave there. Like, Big Dave, Hollywood Dave, comes back for his big run, has his big moment in the title shot that gets overrun by this little dude, and just lays there and taps out.
Taps out for him.
Pro.
You know?
He's a pro.
He is a pro. Exactly. That's fantastic.
Love that.
And again, right there, I mean, the same story we've been seeing all night long. This show pushed the next generation.
Yep.
All the way through and through. We saw so many stars either furthering their stardom or being born on this show.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, we get that amazing shot at the end of the show where Bryan is standing on the ring. He's holding the two titles in his hands because they're united now and they haven't made one belt yet for whatever reason. So he's got both titles. He's doing the yes thing. You see the big WrestleMania sign behind him. All 70,000 plus fans in the arena are doing it in unison. There's confetti falling. I mean, it's one of those really epic Mania moments.
Yep.
And it just really capped off an overall... fantastic show.
And
oh my gosh.
28 was one of my least favorite Manias ever.
Yeah.
Because the card was booked so superbly and the follow through was such a crap show.
Yeah.
That was, and I don't even remember what all the card was. I just remember going, I'm super excited for every match except for Taker H. And Taker H ended up being the only match I walked away from.
Man,
really,
that match was awesome.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like,
I like it a lot. Yeah.
Like going in, it was just one of those where, like, because I was doing the Triple H thing and the Taker thing.
Yeah.
Like, a couple of part timers are going to come in and they're going to do the streak thing.
Yeah.
Like, it'll be cool. I know when the moment hits, it'll be cool, but I'm just not excited.
Not feeling it.
You know, And then I watched the whole show, and the only thing I liked in that whole show was Taker H. You know? And this was like it scared me going into 30. Because going into 30, I'm like, oh, they're cooking up some special stuff so that it'll really hurt when it sucks. And it was so perfectly executed.
Top
to bottom. Even the part I hate, as it turns out, was great.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, I came home that night, and I was like, man, I'm still really bummed out about Undertaker. But the more I think about it, that was an amazing show.
Yeah.
And as I've gone on from the days and let the whole Undertaker thing sink in, and as we've discussed it and kind of, you know, I realize how big of a moment that was and how it fit perfectly with the story of this show being, let's bring the next generation up.
Yep.
It fits in perfect with all that.
You've had 2 days to sit back and go, all right, it's happened, it's sunk in, and I can look back and still say the Undertaker's the Undertaker.
Yeah.
You know, right. Like, it didn't actually eliminate all that
He's
stuff.
Not dead. He didn't die.
Yeah. It just, apparently he came close.
Apparently
but,
he came
you know,
close.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But it's like, all that stuff is still there. It's just, it's got this notch. And I can't even necessarily call it a black mark because Happy over here convinced me that it was a good thing.
That's how I do it.
It was just.
Plus they gave me that Heyman promo the next night.
Man.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I don't want to get too detailed on the Raw afterwards, but I do want to kind of talk about it briefly just because it really puts that whole pinpoint on that whole building up the next generation thing. Because not only did Mania feel so awesome like that and really kind of reward all of us for all this amazing TV we've been seeing all this time, but Raw after WrestleMania showed us that they are really running
They've
with
committed
this.
To it.
This is
followed,
it.
Yeah.
We are seeing history being made right now in the WWE.
It was the perfect companion for WrestleMania.
Oh, Raw was fantastic all the way through. Very exciting night.
Yeah.
And the Raw after Mania is always a special one, but it really
and the crowd's always bananas.
They're
and
nuts.
They didn't.
Oh my gosh!
They didn't let us down at all.
When,
they sang along with the Real Americans music.
Yeah, I know. What? How? Also, I don't know.
I was blown away. I was like, "This is."
Well, what about when the Wyatts were out there and they just kept singing, "He's got the whole world in his hands."
Crazy.
The whole crowd swaying and singing like they're all under his spell. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Crazy.
That's how the post-Mania crowd is.
They're nuts.
I don't know if it's just like the guys who can't afford the Mania tickets or if they're just on some kind of
No, it's a package deal. So it's all the guys from Mania are at Raw, essentially.
Is it?
Usually.
We never got a package deal.
Oh, well, you can get them.
Well, you blew it.
Plus,
apparently,
they were still in Louisiana. They were still in New Orleans.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they just moved from
the
stadium. So
everybody's messed up there anyway. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, it's crazy. It's just, they're all still amped
Think
up.
Think of all the people
They were still making fun of Hogan.
Yeah.
For calling it the Silver Dome.
Oh, man. It's
the next
so
night, yeah.
But
well,
we just saw so many great things that night, though.
Yeah.
You know,
well, what were some of the highlights from that show? There was that Wyatt's.
Wade Barrett knocked out Rey Mysterio.
Oh, Wade Barrett. Yeah. Made his
had a match.
His in-ring return.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. And Wade Barrett's
so great
anyway. I was
sitting there watching the show, texting somebody, going, why is RVD on my TV?
Yeah, man.
What in the world was that?
I don't mind it. I kind of like watching that.
Quick question, too. When they were talking about the Andre Memorial Tournament, and two people I thought said it, I can't remember who, they said something about how it was supposed to be this big 30-man tournament, and all of a sudden there was 31.
That is how it was. It was billed as a 30-man rumble. Cesaro basically inserted himself into it as 31.
Oh, really? Okay,
yeah.
I missed that
because
part.
He was in that tag match on the pre-show and wasn't actually part of that rumble.
Okay.
So
see,
he
I missed
made
that
his
part.
Way
That's
in,
awesome.
And then he won it.
Yeah.
So.
But that was, I mean, we had this Heyman promo that was
oh my gosh
for the ages. And it was really like the true part that made me go, man, I think I might have been fine with that go home.
That's right, yeah.
Because Paul Heyman's so good.
Heyman
he can
and Lesnar
sell
came
anything,
out
apparently.
To cut the promo about ending the streak, and Heyman is so good at talking.
Yeah.
He is just the single best promo artist ever in wrestling.
Watching Brock Lesnar stand next to Heyman while he's talking and not exactly know what to do is one of my favorite things. It's just one of my favorite things.
But just like you said, though, that promo was so good that it did make you realize what kind of a moment that was.
Yeah.
I mean, he just really stamped it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was awesome.
Yeah.
It was so good.
The whole show opened with Daniel Bryan coming out, and he was doing the yes-yes with both belts, and then he was telling the crowd, you know, you guys, like, I'm going to do this for a while, but you've got to understand how hard it is to do this with both these belts.
They're heavy.
They're
heavy,
so heavy. You know? And then H came out and stood up on the ring apron and told him, you know, I'm not going to get into this ring. And Daniel just walks up with that big old smile on his face going, oh, you're not going to come in? Well, I got this for you. And gets right in his face doing the yes with both belts.
That was awesome.
Just as happy as can be. And H tells him, you know, we're going to do a title match tonight.
Well, yeah, this is great because he's just like, he's so mad.
Yep.
He's just like, oh, yeah, well, you're going to wrestle me for the title tonight and I'm going to beat you for it.
Yeah, man. He was so intense.
So cool.
You know, he hasn't quite gotten that intense. I mean, he's been intense and he still hadn't reached that.
Oh,
I thought his forehead was going to split right open.
And then they did that whole deal where they went in back and Orton and Batista both came up to him going, Hunter, this is not what at any point, you know, we were supposed to have singles matches. Orton's like, I got a contract.
Yeah,
that
I got a rematch.
Batista's going, you know, you guys owe me a singles match.
I won the Rumble.
H is telling him, you guys, nothing, whatever.
Yeah, he's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
He's like, let me take care of it first and then you guys will get your matches.
And then Kane screwed the whole authority.
Yeah.
Which was hilarious. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, because they called in the Shield and was like, all right, everybody's on the same page. The only thing we care about is murdering Daniel Bryan. And the Shield has been iffy about these guys for a while anyway because of that deal where Kane destroyed them and then H's buddy. So they've been accusing H of kind of setting that up, and H has been blowing it off. And finally, you know, when they started talking about it this time, Kane is getting in their faces, going nuts because he's going, Triple H doesn't trust you guys, and he's the one who set up this whole thing anyway.
And Stephanie's going, Kane, shut up.
You know, And it was awesome. And again, just another beautiful Stephanie
good
moment.
Good stuff.
It was so awesome. And then they do that segment.
That whole segment.
They do this, the deal at the end where everybody comes up and they're all destroying Daniel Bryan, and they call it. It was the dirty ref they were calling to ring the bell, and wasn't he even going, eh?
No, it was not the dirty ref.
It wasn't the dirty ref? Okay.
No. Yeah. So because they had.
They had Orton and Batista came out and destroyed Bryan.
Kane came out, continued to destroy Bryan. Then H came out and told the ref to ring the bell to start the match.
Yep.
And right as that was getting ready to happen, the Shield's music hits.
Yep.
And as they come out to essentially also beat up Daniel Bryan, they get in the ring, and then Kane and Orton and Batista kind of get in to face off with them, and H is going, whoa, 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 whoa.
Because I felt like I should have thought they were there to destroy Daniel Bryan.
Oh, but we knew.
But as soon as they came over the apron, the factions just got up against each other.
Their music hit and the crowd popped like crazy. And, you know, and then the factions
And they came out with those crazy masks.
Oh. Well, they had those
was Mania.
Did they?
Yeah. Okay. But they also, you wouldn't remember that.
I saw Mania.
But they also, you know, they waited until the bell rang. You know, they weren't out there destroying them with them.
Yeah.
They came out, you know, when it was time to finish them. So it was kind of like, you know, I mean, for even... You know, within the context of the veil, you know, it was like that was the signal that, like, nah, we're not with you guys. We're not here to help.
Yeah.
We're not
this
here to
moment
help.
Was so great, though, because you have on one side of the ring, you have Kane and Batista and Orton. On the other side, you have the Shield. And you have kind of H in the middle with Brian laying there. And you see this moment where H realizes he's losing control of all of this.
Yep.
And he's yelling at them all, going, we're not doing this now. We're not doing this here. Yeah. I'm not starting a war. Yeah. You need to let me do what I'm going to do. And as he's doing that.
Because he kept getting in Kane's and Orton's face, you know, telling them exactly that. Yeah. We're not starting a war right now.
Yeah.
We're not doing this.
Yeah. And then, bam. Roman Reigns hits spear. That spear on H,
awesome.
And the crowd erupts, and this moment of warfare breaks out,
and
it's just amazing. And the Shield and Daniel Bryan get over on the heels, they toss him out of the ring, and
they stand tall. I mean, Daniel Bryan was just pretty much out the whole time, but they do their plancha bits, and they do the whole thing, they knock everybody out except for H, and H is still getting up off that spear, and there's that moment, man, where he gets up, and he kind of comes to, and he looks around, and he realizes
surrounded
that
by the Shield.
The Shield is circling him, and there's just that moment of realization where you can feel it. And he ended up, you know, skirting away out of there. They pulled him out, and he didn't get triple powerbombed or anything, but there was still just that moment where he's like,
but he got
all right.
He did get the knee. Because the Shield had him.
Knee.
The Shield had him surrounded. He stood up and realized he was in trouble, and they turned around and got the knee.
Yep.
It was amazing.
Yep.
It was absolutely
And then they
amazing.
Yank him out and everything, but that was just like,
and
oh, man.
The show ends with all those young guys standing tall, and, you know, it was amazing. And, you know, just among that, I mean, just real quick, we saw Cesaro align himself with Paul Heyman, which was an amazing moment.
Yep.
Paige debuted from NXT and stole the belt, the Diva title from AJ. And if you haven't seen NXT...
That segment was more awkward than I hoped, because I do like that chick.
Yeah. That chick
and
is,
I have seen her in NXT.
And
she's good.
She's good. She's actually... She can wrestle. You know, she's,
exactly.
She's got some
wrestling. It wasn't like there wasn't much to the wrestling segment of
it. Right, there wasn't.
Like the promo segment of it.
It was a nice shocking moment, though, too. Because I remember watching that and going, oh, cool, Paige is here. I was like, hey, what if she just straight takes this title from AJ? And then she did. And I went.
And for the record, that's not my standard, ugh, it's the Divas complaint.
Yeah.
Because I do like that chick. I think she's good. That was simply I think the young lady was a little out of her element, and it showed through.
Well, it might
have. But chill. Yeah.
I think that's a booking issue, because they always try and make the good divas, the face divas, that they got to play that sweet innocent girl next door thing. Man, is that not
Paige? That's not her.
She doesn't
at all.
Even look like that.
No.
You know,
for sure.
But she still kind of came out, and you know, they tried to make it seem like she was genuinely coming to apologize, and Big Bully AJ was doing this. No, they should have just let
her go
out there.
Maybe it was a booking thing.
That's,
then, but either
that's
way,
what
it was
I think.
Very
that's
awful.
What I think.
Yeah,
I mean, they always. I mean, but they do always try and do that. You know, like. I can't think of a good example right now. You know,
any other diva?
Any
example,
other? You know, any time a diva is a good girl, she's got to be sweet and innocent, and you know. Well, I mean, shoot, they used to make Mickey James cry when Lay Cool made fun of her. You know?
Oh,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's totally their perception that, oh, the good girl has to be the girl next
door. Has to be, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool moment, though, still. I'm excited to see what comes of that. Yeah. You know? Now we've got a new player in the Divas division, one who the crowd actually is behind and respects, and you get her in there with somebody like AJ, who the crowd also likes.
Yep.
We might have some good stuff going on here.
Oh, for sure.
You know? That, and that's exciting.
Whenever the Divas division is good at all, it's always really exciting.
It is. It's
you
neat.
Know? So
it's
I'm neat. Hoping that that's exactly what they do here.
And then we also, quickly, we saw two previews for up-and-coming guys who must have been called up.
Yep.
We saw Bo Dallas and we saw Adam Rose, who are both NXT guys, and now they're showing promos for them on Raw. So this is just really furthering that whole, it's time to bring in these new guys. It's time to focus on these new guys. And I just feel like, man, after Mania and after that Raw, it's such a cool, exciting, like refreshing feeling about wrestling, and I'm anxious to see where this is all going, you know?
Well, I feel it's important to point out, too, because after Mania is always the time they start to call up developmental guys.
Right.
But usually, it's spread out between, between Mania and SummerSlam, where they're kind of calling these guys up and seeing if anybody's going to, you know, stick or not.
And now they have a true showcase for them.
They really NXT. Do. With NXT like being a thing now, and you know, people can watch these guys. Like
they can TV test these guys before.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But my thing was going to be that never have we seen all of them get called up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The night after Mania. Like, the night after Mania, they're like, okay, here's Rusev.
They sent Rusev out there. Oh, yeah.
Bo Dallas is, you know, Bo Dallas promos. Adam Rose promos. Oh, here's Paige, too. Oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
Wade Barrett's wrestling again.
Wade Barrett's, back. You know.
Dude, it's like, it was cool, man.
Yeah.
It was just so exciting. So
super cool. Makes me want to watch SmackDown, and that's absurd.
So, overall, so just speaking on WrestleMania 30, just everything that's been happening, we've said it over and over again, but the whole thing was just a very epic feeling event. I mean, everything about it was so exciting. I feel like the show itself was one of the best WrestleManias I've seen in recent memory.
Yeah.
Everything about it, you know, I was bummed about the Taker thing, but even after letting that set for a couple days, I can look back now and realize just how momentous everything on that card really was.
Yep.
Like, nothing really felt out of place or just tacked on. Like, everything had a purpose.
Right.
Everything had a great payoff. They're building towards some amazing things now, and they've got me excited about the future of this product.
Yeah, it was a total package.
Yep. Absolutely.
It was amazing. Was it the best?
Ever? Not ever.
Okay.
What's your favorite ever still?
19.
19?
Yep.
I was at 19, for the record.
Good for you.
19 was an entire card of main events. Best Mania ever.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
This was pretty close, though. Does this rank pretty? Do you need to let it set for a while before you can tell?
Yeah, you don't have to commit to it.
What I need to do is watch it again. I will say it's been the best. It's been the best since 20.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was such a great day, you know, all around. And I just remember, man, just really thinking back on that Mania. We were so excited for the whole show.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from the one bum out moment with the Taker, I mean, we were up for that whole show. There wasn't a moment I wanted to even stop and take a pee break because everything was too good and too exciting. You know? Yeah, the Divas match. Well, I was already upset at that point anyway, so I didn't care what was going on. But, yeah. Yeah,
well,
good stuff.
Awesome. I mean, seriously, two of the best days in wrestling I can remember.
Absolutely.
You know? Amazing stuff. Real quick, just since we've come so far anyway, let's not ignore our email request from earlier.
Let's hammer this out real quick.
Let's do them fast, and then we can open up the discussion on a later episode if need be. Favorite wrestlers from when we were a kid? I was a total face mark because I was a total mark. I thought it was all real and all that stuff. So, of course, Hogan was my number one guy.
Okay.
Also, always a huge Jake fan, even when I was a kid. Jake the Snake. Yeah, was always one of our tops. We used to go to the local convention center to see wrestling whenever they came through town. And me and my mom were always super excited to see Jake the Snake. And I was always really mad at the WWF for
booking him on the posters and then not even having him on the card because at the time I was too young to realize that he was just coked out in his hotel room and couldn't make the show, you know?
Yeah.
And then in retrospect, had I known more of what I know now when I was a kid, I think Million Dollar Man would have been my favorite from day one.
Oh, yeah.
So those are the three that I want to bring up.
Okay. What do you got, Jaren?
Well, I was a kid. Obviously, Hogan, Warrior, mm-hmm. you know, you liked the big guys. The ones that I remember, and you did three, so I'll do three. Actually, Bad News Brown. Always liked Bad News Brown. I remember thinking that Bad News Brown and Mr. T were the same person. As a kid, I was stupid.
Yeah.
But it was part of the reason I liked Bad News Brown.
Ah.
Always rooted for Bad News Brown. Roddy Piper. Mm. Always remember liking Roddy Piper. I don't know what it was. I mean, he certainly wasn't always a good guy when I was young,
right.
But I always liked Roddy Piper, and he always wore the kilt. I thought that was cool. And I can't tell you anything else. Just I remember being a Hot Rod fan.
Yeah.
And Big Boss, Big Boss Man. Yeah.
Boss Man.
Yeah, I don't particularly remember liking Big Boss Man. Or, you know, I can't remember any moment where I was like, yeah, Big Boss Man. I just remember, oh, the cop. You know,
yeah.
So I think I feel like he gets that, he should have that recognition. Like, yeah, I always remember the cop.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. So, I do have to go ahead and say, obviously, Undertaker has got to be my number one choice. And I know that he didn't actually start in WWF until, like, 90, 91?
Yeah.
90. But also, like, that's... In the 80s, it was always kind of like a sporadic thing that I would see wrestling. Mm-hmm. I didn't follow it as much as I'd like to have.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until around the time that Undertaker was a mainstay that I was really watching wrestling. So my childhood memories are always going to be of guys like The Undertaker. Shawn Michaels was just breaking out at that time, right away from the Rockers. And I always liked him, regardless of his character. Something about him always drew me in. Always thought Shawn was cool. I used to love the Legion of Doom. Love the Legion of Doom. And it's just one of those things because they were the guys with the face paint and the big red spiky shoulder pads. And I thought that was really cool when I was a kid. And I loved the Legion of Doom.
I respect your taste a little less.
I'm sorry.
I always hated those guys because they were so hard to beat in WrestleFest.
You listed the Ultimate Warrior in your list, so you're not allowed to judge.
He wasn't one of his three. He just said his name.
I know. And it's one of those things, too, where, like...
Well, see, I listed him as one of those guys I was too stupid not to like.
Okay, well...
Because I was a kid.
My favorite tag team's New Age Outlaws.
Oh, yeah.
I love the New Age Outlaws. Yeah, I mean, you look back, though, and obviously with our tastes changing as we get older and actually getting into it, there's so many guys from back then that I love, like Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
He's got to be one of my favorites from that era. Absolutely love Roddy Piper, so... I didn't like him as much as a kid, but I would totally pick him from that era.
And that's kind of what I meant with Million Dollar Man. I always hated Ted DiBiase when I was a kid
because
he was
great.
A total bad guy and he was always going after my
guys. I know
guys,
another one
know?
That I loved even as a kid, Mr. Perfect. I always liked Mr. Perfect, so he's another good one to put on there. But awesome. So there we go. I think we had a really great discussion about everything going on with wrestling. I know guys like Adam have... kind of fallen out of wrestling, and that's why he really wanted to hear our thoughts on this. So if anybody used to be a big wrestling fan and you've kind of thought about getting back into it, I really think now is a great time to start like checking things out,
because
you're going to start witnessing a lot of these new guys really being born
and
right here.
Plus, to sing more praise on that network right now more than ever is the mix of old and new.
Oh,
because
yeah.
everything you want to see is out there.
Absolutely.
And
dude,
those guys have an opportunity to show up and do whatever they want whenever they want. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, you won't see a lot of those guys wrestling anymore, but there's so much throwback to go along with the so much new blood. Like, it's just all right there at your fingertips.
Right.
You can also go back and watch old stuff and have that nostalgic lens ripped off your eyes.
Oh, no kidding, right?
Awful.
Hey, anybody that wants to... dude, just go watch a bunch of WCW pay-per-views. You might...
You know, I remember being 20 years old and going, look, they've got their problems, but they're a legitimate thing. And now I go back and watch some of those pay-per-views from that year and go,
right?
no, I was
I was a stupid sort of adult.
Hey, look, yeah.
It wasn't just a kid thing.
Sort of adult.
Hey, it's the same thing with the Attitude Era.
Yep.
Everybody's always talking about how great the Attitude Era was. Go back and watch a bunch of that stuff, guys.
Right.
It had its amazing moments. It had a lot of crap going on, too. Yep. It
You remember Stone Cold versus Bret Hart.
Oh,
you don't remember Quang versus
Attila. Yeah.
Well, now I do.
What about eight ball versus Chain?
I was going to say, all the Savio Vega and Los Boricuas and all that nonsense that was going on all the time. Oh, my goodness.
In your house.
And all the ridiculous promos that were happening constantly and all the run-ins. Yeah. So many run-ins. Oh, that era. Dude, guys. Friggin' blinded by nostalgia.
We watched that hardcore match. I was sitting there with a 12-year-old, and we watched that hardcore match from WrestleMania 2000. Mm. Is that the where they did the one where it was like nonstop? Whoever got pinned.
Oh, the hardcore
for like a time limit one.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Yep,
and he was going, "Hey, do they do any more of those anywhere on here?" And I just went, "Nope." That was the only one.
That was it.
Ever.
That was it.
On to something else now.
Awesome. Well, we've been talking wrestling for over 2 hours, so we are going to go ahead and cap this one off.
Bye, everybody.
First, I'd like to thank Jaren for joining us once again to talk wrestling.
Yep.
Always a pleasure, bud.
I'll come anytime you're talking wrestling. I don't know anything about anything else.
Just wrestling.
Just wrestling.
That's all he knows. All right, Jonathan, you got anything you want to plug for the end of the show here?
Keep starting to follow me on Twitter. My number's starting to rise, and it's just cool to watch. So, at JLeonard31.
Sweet. Awesome, guys. And you can always follow me on Twitter at PixelDan. Be sure to check out pixel-dan.com for all the latest stuff from me, including toy review videos and this podcast. And as a reminder, guys, if you got something you want to send in, any fan questions, anything like that, you can shoot us an email, admin@pixel-dan.com, or just post a comment on the website. So that's going to wrap up this installment of the Geek Easy Podcast. Until next time, when we'll probably be talking about Captain America.
Yeah.
I'm Pixel Dan.
I'm Jonathan Leonard.
We'll see you guys next time.
The Geek Easy Podcast is a production of PixelDan.com. Musical tracks used in the intro and outro are used with full permission of the respective owners or creators. Intro and outro narrations are provided by me, Brian T. Stevenson. Any animated series discussed are copyright their respective owners. PixelDan.com's The Geek Easy Podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only. The views expressed are those solely of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily represent those of PixelDan.com or any other party. Be sure to join us next time for another installment of the Geek Easy Podcast.